It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Devendra Hardawar is here. Dwight Silverman, Microsoft's biggest acquisition ever, but will the feds allow them to buy Activision Blizzard? The IRS is going to require Face ID if you want to use their site. I can't wait to see how people react to that. And should you take your smartphone to the Beijing Olympics? Security experts say no way. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT. Episode 859. Recorded Sunday, January 23rd, 2022. Damn the crepe myrtle. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me safe online. Visit expressvpn.com/twit and get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. And by New Relic. That next 9 p.m. call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data free forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/twit. And by Streak. Whether you're tracking sales, fundraising, hiring, or support, Streak is a CRM that will help you stay on top of all your processes directly inside Gmail. Get 20% off your first year of their pro plan, their most popular option, by going to streak.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Several industries are projected to grow this year. If you own a business in one of those growing industries and need to hire, go to ZipRecruiter. They find qualified candidates for your job fast. Try ZipRecruiter free today at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show we cover the tech news of the week. I don't mean to say it's tech snooze. It is the... But it might be. Not this week, actually. Nothing to snooze over. Dwight Silverman is here, formerly of the Houston Chronicle, now of all over the place. But you can find all his work at Authory, authory.com/dsilverman. Hello, Dwight.
So hello. How are you?
You're staying very busy in retirement, so-called.
Yes, well, I'm still, my column has returned at the Chronicle Weekly. And so that's kind of my primary gig. And occasionally I've been doing standalone stories for them. And, but for the most part, I'm just enjoying kicking back and not doing all that much.
And contributing to us. Thank you very much. Love to have you on. Also with us, another regular we love to see, Devendra Hardawar, senior editor at Engadget and host of the Filmcast. Hi, Devendra.
Hello. Happy to be here. What a week to be here, too. I thought it was going to be a sleepy week, but
no,
this is huge.
No snoozing in this tech snooze this week. And we did have, I'm sorry to say, we had Brianna Wu scheduled both last week and this week. Brianna had nodes in her throat operated on, and she still sounds really gravelly. She wanted to join us, and I said, no, I want you to rest. So we'll get her back on. This would have been a good week to have Brianna's take because the big story, of course, Microsoft making its biggest acquisition ever, bigger than LinkedIn, $68.7 billion to buy Activision Blizzard. And I'm sure Brianna would have had lots to say. Of course, Blizzard, Activision, has been, you know, under the spotlight lately for the harassment and the kind of the boys club. It was interesting because so in a way Microsoft is too. They've just agreed to have an investigation of how they've treated harassment cases in the past, including the Bill Gates harassment case. So is it two boys clubs joining, or is it a chastened Microsoft saying, we're going to do the right thing and we're going to clean up Activision? What do you think, Devendra? First of all, is Bobby Kotick going to stay or no?
I think that's the big question for a lot of people, right? Like I've spent the past year charting like all the stories around Activision and basically how Bobby Kotick fostered this company that was not a great institution when it came to women and harassment and things like that. Like, it wasn't a great place for a lot of people. The story now is that, at least what Microsoft is saying, is that he's going to stay on, you know, what? If this merger goes through, he's going to stay on. But then there was additional reporting after this was announced where people were like, under the table, just telling WSJ and others, I think, like, he's out. He's going to be out. But with a big, you know, multi-million, $100 million parachute.
Yeah, he's a huge share. So Kotick joined, I didn't realize this, in 91. He's been there since 19. That's almost 40. What is it? 40 years. What is it? My math's terrible.
No,
29 years.
I'm not 40 yet. I'm almost there. Yeah.
91 plus 2, carry the 4. Anyway, a long time, almost 30 years, a little more than 30 years. And so he's actually taken Activision to new heights. He really took a company that was dying, going almost bankrupt, and turned it into a gaming behemoth. But at the same time, he's also 100. I'll look at this article from a few months ago in the Washington Post. Over 100 Activision Blizzard employees stage walkout, demand CEO steps down. Maybe this had something to do with the sale, to be honest with you. Maybe Kotick said, I'm going to cash out. And and certainly one of the reasons Microsoft was able to buy it is the stock price had tumbled over the last year because of
it was a strange situation, right? Like, that's the thing. As we were reporting this, the board of Activision was fully on his side. They had, you know, they fully supported him because he's made them a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's made Activision and shareholders a lot of money. So nobody's going to out there, basically for the past few decades, like Kotick has created that company, you know, and turned it into a behemoth. This is probably the best possible solution where he gets out, the company can start fresh somewhere else, and he faces no consequences because that's the way business works in America.
Yeah. Here's another story from IGN. Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick reportedly turned up late and left early from a fireside chat meeting that was meant to reassure employees of Activision Blizzard about their future. A fireside chat that was supposed to last half an hour, 16 minutes after Kotick himself turned up 7 minutes late and finished early. I think he's on his way out. I think he's taken the big payoff. And Microsoft probably is solidifying its position as a gaming company. They just bought Bethesda. They have Minecraft.
This is huge. Yeah.
This is huge. And by the way, they don't just get Call of Duty and
World of Warcraft.
They get King. They get Candy Crush. This is a gaming behemoth. They also get mobile. There's mobile Call of Duty. There's obviously King is mostly mobile. This is a really good way for Microsoft to position itself in the gaming industry. Shares of Sony, makers of the PlayStation 5, tumbled $20 billion when this news came out because of the fear that Microsoft would make all of these money makers for Sony Xbox exclusives. Microsoft kind of hedged its bets on that one. I said, yeah, no, we wouldn't.
We'll adhere to all existing deals, you know? Yeah.
Well, and at the same time that this, on the same day that this news broke, we also heard that the Justice Department is reorganizing so it could get tougher on tech company mergers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to wonder if this has to get through regulatory scrutiny, of course.
Yes, yes. And I suspect that it's not going to get through regulatory scrutiny until there are ironclad agreements, or at least as best as you could get them, that Microsoft won't take all these and make them Xbox exclusives. And actually, you know, Microsoft's current point of view seems to be the more platforms, the merrier. And,
that's exactly what Satya Nadella does. It's, you know, his first act as CEO was to announce Microsoft Office for the iPad. He's, you know, which was, you know, very kind of sacrilegious in Microsoft at the time.
But and Microsoft wants, you know, as you mentioned, there's all these mobile games on here. Microsoft really doesn't have a mobile platform.
No, this is
this gives them iPad and Android to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And so it'll give them, you know, I don't see this stuff going under Xbox umbrella. The only thing is, of course, is that there's been this constant cliche of the Netflix of games, that's what everybody is headed to. And it could be that Microsoft just makes it easier to do these games on any Microsoft platform. That could be the
approach. Let's address this regulatory issue. Microsoft says this acquisition makes us the number three gaming company in the world, not even number one. Obviously, that's a defensive statement, right? We're not a monopoly.
We're still so small. We're just little guys.
We're an indie studio.
But you're right. Mm-hmm. This is not the climate right now. I mean, the FTC and the DOJ, and we'll get to this in a little bit, but they're starting to say, well, what does monopoly mean in the modern age, and what should we? I think there's a lot of regret about not stopping the WhatsApp and Instagram acquisitions by Facebook, and I think that there may be that there will be additional scrutiny that you can count on that of this. On the other hand, doesn't make Microsoft number one. Tencent is bigger. They're Chinese.
Tencent is number one.
Yeah, Tencent's number
Tencent
one.
Is the number one.
Yeah,
and Sony's still number two.
Sony's number two.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. It really depends what the rules are these days, and that seems to be a shifting playground. The Bobby Kotick himself gave an interview with GamesBeat, and they asked him, "Why do the deal? Why is this a good time to sell? Why is it a good price?"
I gotta go, guys. Come on.
To which Bobby said, "What are you crazy?" No, he said,
"Yeah,
it's interesting." He said, "As you look at the increased competition between Tencent, NetEase, I'm not sure who that is, Sony, and now you have Google and Amazon and Apple and Facebook and Microsoft and Netflix, which is interesting because they're getting into gaming too. We were looking at over the course of the next couple of years, starting to realize." In order to execute our future plans, we needed thousands of new people. That's interesting. We need them in disciplines like AI, machine learning, data analytics, cloud, cybersecurity. They're people we don't have, and the competition for that talent's really expensive. We've started to see that now, where Apple's offering big bonuses if you don't get a job somewhere else. The engineering talent is hard to come by. Kotick says that. So we're starting to think about skills we need, we don't have. There was an acknowledgement and recognition that we don't know how to get this talent. Then Satya and Phil Spencer, head of gaming at Microsoft, who started having conversations with them. When Phil called, it happened to be a time we were getting ready to start our long-range planning process, realizing there were going to be challenges and issues. This is the kind of thing, by the way, that you would say it was a strategic move. It was the move we had to make at this time in the business, completely ignoring all the other issues that he's facing personally.
That's like Facebook rebranding to Meta. Look over here, please. Don't look at all this other stuff. Yeah. We're moving on.
Yeah. Plus, their stock price, thanks to all these harassment allegations, had tumbled to almost half over the last year. And Microsoft was offering them 45% premium over the price. Microsoft.
In cash. Yeah.
Of course you're going to take that. Why? You know, there's not even a question. He says, they asked him, good on GamesBeat, was a sexual harassment investigation a factor? He said, it seemed to affect the stock price, right? He said, I think what affected the stock price... is pushing out Overwatch and Diablo. And then people started to see this year's Call of Duty wasn't performing well. I think the California Department of Fair Housing and Employment filing and the Wall Street Journal article contributed. But stocks go up and down for a variety of reasons. And our view is $95 a share with all cash. That's a great deal for our shareholders. And it was an easy judgment. It's a great deal.
Shout out to Dean Takahashi, who did that interview, too. Dean I used to work with Dean when I was at VentureBeat. Yep. So, yeah, great, good stuff.
Yeah, very good. Very good job. So Kotick's not going to say, I felt the heat. I thought I'd get out of the kitchen. He's going to get out with a lot of money. Just proving, you know, I don't know.
Has there been any reporting on who else came at Activision? If anybody else started to make a run at him?
I haven't seen any, but it's also like who can? You know, who has enough money to do this? Maybe Apple, but Apple historically has been really bad with games. You know, like they've had good stuff since the App Store came about and Apple Arcade is starting, and they're really good with indie developers, but they don't really make their own games. You know, they don't really understand this market. So maybe Google. You know, it would have to be a big boy to get it.
I think Google comes to you and you're Bobby
or Amazon,
I would listen to.
Amazon,
Google, yeah. I would laugh them out the door. I mean, look what they've done with Stadia. They did, in fact, create their own independent game studio, which didn't even last a year.
Yeah. So did Amazon. Yeah. And they kind of shut some stuff down.
Yeah. Although New World's, I've heard, doing very well for Amazon. So it just, Microsoft makes sense across the board. They're already in gaming.
Absolutely.
They make a very popular console, not the number one, but the number two console. The other thing that's not to be ignored, as Kotick was saying, they have AI expertise, they have cloud expertise, they have Azure. In fact, it's good for Microsoft's other businesses. The more they use Azure, the more they use gaming, especially xCloud, their cloud gaming. That's a good testament to the strength of their network, which they can show other companies. Look, you know, we're living on Azure. You should live on Azure. So I think this, all in all, is a great deal for Microsoft, right? It's expensive.
It's also...
That's the only negative.
It's the thing Dwight had mentioned too, like the Netflix of gaming. That is what Game Pass is, and we haven't talked about Game Pass yet, but that thing, that subscription service is ridiculous. It's a ridiculously good deal for consumers. You pay like a monthly fee and you get access to hundreds of games, and as Microsoft buys all these studios,
now even
those
better.
Games,
yeah.
They get wrapped into Game Pass. So then it's like, it's a no-brainer if you're a Windows user or an Xbox user. Like, why wouldn't you pay for this? And why wouldn't you pay for, Game Pass Ultimate, which also has Xbox Live? You get everything, you know, I'd rather pay $15 a month rather than $60 for a new game. But $15 a month, you get those new games, like the new Microsoft stuff, immediately. So it's just such a good deal. And that is completely changing the gaming landscape right now. So Sony is hustling to, like, figure out a solution, because the way Sony makes games is so different than the way Xbox Studios make games. Sony makes big AAA titles like The Last of Us 2. Microsoft has had a lot of trouble making their own games. It took Halo Infinite so many years and so many delays to come out. So the value proposition of what Microsoft is building here just seems like undeniably great for consumers. But there's a lot of worry. I'm sure Brianna would have talked about like what this means for developers. Over at Engadget, Jessica Condit wrote up a great piece about like why this is not a good thing for the gaming industry, because for developers, more consolidation isn't always good, you know, and a lot of people think indie gaming is where the future
can
of this
you
industry
even
really
be
lies.
An indie
yeah.
gamer
oh
these
not
days?
Anymore
can
not
you?
With this not with this no I don't think with this deal. No, because then you got, I mean, who knows what Tencent is doing, but you've got Sony, you know, which is a giant studio. You've got Microsoft. There's a lot of gravity. It's like black holes. You know, regarding the Netflix of games, there's more than one of these operations like XPass. There's NVIDIA has one, Steam.
Steam isn't a subscription, right? Yeah. NVIDIA's isn't the same. It's a little different. That's like just streaming. That's not like all you can eat, just gobble up all these games, you know, immediately.
But it wouldn't take that much for Steam to start offering that. And they probably will at some point.
There's a little bit of a cloud business at Steam. But it's not the big business. Mostly it's games in Steam. It's a library.
You buy games and also like it's your internal cloud. So you have a Steam box, you have your gaming PC, and you put an app on your Apple TV or something. You can play games remotely within your house. You could stream locally, but doing it remotely or from like far off distances, that's much harder. What NVIDIA is doing is interesting, but that is specifically against Xbox cloud gaming, which I feel like Microsoft is just kind of hedging their bets on right now. But the brilliant thing is that is a part of Game Pass as well. So Game Pass subscribers on their consoles now on PCs can just hit a button and start streaming game. Don't have to download anything. Don't have to install it. Microsoft just like really has their fingers in all the like pieces of the future of gaming. And I think that's what's worrying a lot of big companies. I'm sure Sony is freaking out right now because when it comes to online stuff, when it comes to like next gen gaming ideas, Sony almost always feels like they're kind of lagging behind, whereas Nintendo and Microsoft tend to be the innovators, really.
I wonder if, I mean, Game Pass is clearly a winner. I'm sure the price will go up. I wonder if it'd be even more of a winner if they could have sold more Xboxes. They're so, the supply is so constrained. Although, I mean, the benefit of Game Pass is you can play on, you know, a dumb
old Xboxes.
You could play it on an old one. You can play it anywhere.
They've also talked about making dongles that you just plug into your TV, and that's what you used to stream cloud games to.
Because all the work's done in the cloud, so it can run on any dumb terminal, basically.
Where Microsoft's going, there are no consoles, you know? Like, it is the Back to the Future thing. They are leapfrogging to, like, this whole other idea of what the industry is going to be, whereas Sony's like, please buy this box. This box is all of us. Yeah, this is our entire company.
People are buying
this
box.
Yeah,
people
are buying
it. They are.
It's the best seller by far, far and away. Its supply is not as constrained either. I don't know what Sony did differently from Microsoft, but it's a lot easier to get a PlayStation 5 than an Xbox Series X. S you can get, but X is hard to get. I know because I keep trying.
Microsoft doesn't care because they just want you to buy that subscription.
I think you're right.
Stay on it forever.
Right. I think you're right. In fact, the way they want you to buy an Xbox these days is with a $35 a month Game Pass subscription that includes an Xbox. They're so smart. I honestly am more and more impressed with Satya Nadella's management. He's turned away from that Windows. It's Windows or nothing, right? He's turned away from that. He's really pivoted a giant company and has made it more successful. And I think this is a really good example of a strategic acquisition that just makes sense in every way. And they've got the money. It's about half of their cash position. It's about 1 month of revenue. That's expensive. It's not cheap. But I think it's a good investment in their future. And the main thing to me is it synergizes well with their other businesses. It's just a natural all around. I can't see any negatives at all to it.
Absolutely. Like this has shifted the entire industry, but also really charts the course for Microsoft's future when it comes to mobile gaming. And I cringe when people talk about the metaverse now, but whatever that is, certainly this puts them in a place to be like a major player in whatever virtual future we're kind of moving towards. Yeah.
Well, and that's the other question is, esports, right? You'd like to be in that business these days. That's got a growth. Cloud gaming, but cloud everything, cloud Windows, cloud Office. That makes a lot of sense. And the other thing Microsoft is clearly wants to do, it's one of the reasons they bought LinkedIn. It's why they tried to get Discord. They want somehow to be part of communities, part of, social, I guess, is a way you describe it. They want the social graph. They want access to the social graph. And that's you get with this as well, right?
But they're not good at it. Microsoft is kind of like Apple, but they're not that good at it.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I forget where I saw this, but I saw something written last week about LinkedIn is the most cringe social network that there is. You know, it's marketers and wonks and business geeks and more jargon than you could shake a stick at. And it's just, you know, it's really uncomfortable. And and Microsoft is just not good at that. Historically, they've tried and they have just not been able to make that work for them.
But Phil Spencer, who will be running the gaming business, is good, right? He's a good he's a good manager. He's not a nerdy business wonk. I'm sure he talks the talk in the halls of Microsoft.
On Xbox, the communities are per game. And that's a different thing than like having the Xbox community. The communities are perfect.
Well, that's a really good point because we discovered that 10 years ago, almost exactly when we created a gaming show called Game On, that there is no monolithic gaming community. There is this so diverse. There's console gamers who hate PC gamers, who hate casual gamers. And if you're a Call of Duty player, you're not interested in Battlefield. It's really interesting. They are very stratified. And so we couldn't come up with one show that would appeal to everybody. But that doesn't mean Microsoft couldn't have stratified communities in all those areas, you know?
And the landscape just looks really different now than it did 10 years ago, too. Like,
yes.
Yeah, people tend to like their franchises, but I listen to a ton of video game podcasts.
Do you?
Is the thing. I don't have enough time to like play all the games I want to play or read all the reviews and stuff. So podcasts are like a nice passive way for me to keep up with what's happening. And there's a lot of like great general coverage there, but I know the way people want to kind of consume stuff now is by watching videos, watching people play either via live streams
or
Let's Plays.
That's what's really exploded.
Exploded
the last 10 years is Let's Play videos. First on YouTube with Minecraft and now with Twitch. And Microsoft tried to get in that business. They bought Mixer, remember, and had to fold it. There was
so much money at it. Yeah.
They stole away Ninja and other, you know, famous gamers and it just flopped miserably. So maybe they do have something to learn in this, but here's another chance. Here's another shot for them.
Certainly.
Yeah. I certainly don't blame Bobby Kotick. I hope he gets out, though. I really do. And then goes to jail. That would be my hope.
Yeah, I hope he gets to look at his hundreds of millions and then faces some serious consequences. Yeah.
Through bars. Mm-hmm. That'll be good. I shouldn't say
he'll spend it on lawyers.
That's mean. Yeah.
Well deserved.
But yeah, I feel like it might be kind of we've covered these stories over the years, but they had a Bill Cosby room where they had a picture of Bill Cosby and they would invite women back to the room. I mean, and Kotick knew about all this. There's no question. He either turned a blind eye toward it or even encouraged it. And so I think the buck stops there. I really do. And boy, it's just a nasty nest of stuff. We talked about this also, and this is where Brianna would be in a great advantage to this show. I think they had the perception, there is the perception, you need to create that kind of environment to get the best game developers. That's what gamers are. That's what game developers are. And I hate that notion. I think we've got to get beyond that. That's terrible.
It sucks. I think like at a certain point over the last few decades, this also like was the rock star thing, you know,
yep.
The Grand Theft Auto folks.
Yep.
People thought the game developers, they wanted to be rock stars, you know, so they get to be as wild and crazy as like Led Zeppelin was in their heyday or something. And like it is that mentality of like it is basically bro culture, you know, somehow begets genius. Yeah, programmers makes genius and that makes us money. So that's what we want. And yeah, the world is certainly very different now. So I hope like he faces a reckoning.
If you go back to the earliest days of gaming, that's how Activision started. Atari wouldn't let their programmers take credit for the games. Remember in Atari games in the early days, programmers would hide Easter eggs so that they could have their name, you know, be seen. Activision said, we'll give you credit. We'll let your name be on the game. And they were able to draw huge talent away from Atari to Activision, developed amazing games like Pitfall, Prince of Persia. It was a really great game house. And it was because they said you can take credit. So it may be that's in the roots of Activision. And by the way,
go ahead.
Well, you also have to give credit for that to id Software, which created really kind of the first group of rock
stars.
Programmers.
Yeah.
Right. That it became like a super group. You know, I had seen the original developers of Doom and Quake referred to as like the Beatles of gaming. And it was funny when they went off on their separate ways, they really couldn't kind of do what they did, you know, at id. But what's interesting is Bethesda owns id and id is now under the auspices of Microsoft.
Microsoft owns everything. Microsoft owns Pitfall and, you know, all of gaming history now, basically. But it's funny you brought up Atari, Leo, because there are so many stories about Nolan Bushnell and how he ran Atari and, like, what a sexist prick he was, basically.
Oh, really?
And that's the gaming. That's gaming.
Yeah.
You know? And
gaming needs to be accessible and open and welcoming to women because that's 50% of the market. It's not just guys playing games. It doesn't have to be like that. I think that the times have changed, I hope. By the way, did you know that Bobby Kotick and Sheryl Sandberg dated for 3 years?
What?
It's very, very confusing.
I don't know, but I mean, this is the People Magazine segment here. Chat room just told me a year after Sheryl's husband passed, she started dating Bobby Kotick. So I don't know what that means. They broke up 3 years later. Okay.
It's funny to see Page Six follow something like that.
That was a very Page Six story. Yeah. See, tech is with it now. It's hip. It's new. It's now. It's not the geeks anymore. Somebody's saying she really leaned in there. Let's take a look. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Neither here nor there. Very interesting. We got to get regulatory approval. That's not a cakewalk. And then B, they've got to absorb this behemoth. They did pretty well, I think, with Bethesda. They certainly did excellent. We know they did well with Mojang and Minecraft. So I think there's a good track record there. And then let's see what happens with the exclusives. I think Microsoft's best bet is just to say Game Pass everywhere. Play it on your PlayStation.
That's it.
Game Pass everywhere. We don't care.
Bring it to the Mac.
Yeah.
Bring it to the Mac.
Well, it's funny because there is a story about Fortnite coming back to the Mac and iOS through the back door.
Streaming, right.
With GeForce Now, with NVIDIA's service. Yeah. So that could happen. You can play Game Pass in a browser on the Mac, can't you?
You can play it in a browser too. But yeah. I do wonder, like, looking at all this news, what is Apple doing? You know, I've reviewed all the M1, you know, MacBooks and whatnot, and every time I try to like get games outside of Apple Arcade on that, it is a nightmare. And it's ridiculous, like, how badly Apple has treated games as a segment. So I don't know. It was almost a
self-fulfilling prophecy that people said, there's no gaming on Mac. And then Apple said, yeah, you're right.
You're right.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Every now and then, Apple pops its head up and says, no, wait. Gaming on the Mac is great, and it's coming back, and they trot out some developers, but they haven't done that in
Remember
a while.
The Pippin? They were actually building a console at one point.
Yes. So, but the thing is that these M1 Macs, particularly the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, are incredibly powerful. They have the same kind of a graphics subsystem that is on the iPhone and the iPad, which is great for mobile gaming. And so the components are there for them to do it in a big way. I think somebody just needs to kind of step up and go, here's it needs a killer app, it needs a killer game.
But aren't they swimming against the tides, though? Because it seems to, I've actually thought this when Apple is creating these better and better desktops, and there's no question, these things are superb. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with my M1 Pro MacBook, 14-inch MacBook. It's amazing. But isn't the trend away from powerful desktops towards cloud computing? And that's where gaming's going, right? You don't need a fancy gaming rig. You don't need an M1. We'll run the, servers in the cloud. You just need a stream to it. And so I wonder if maybe we've been saying this for years. I don't know if the desktop computing is dead, but I do feel like the cloud is going to at some point take over.
Well, particularly if you're on I'm on a M1 Pro MacBook, 14-inch MacBook Pro now.
But you don't need to be.
I don't need to be, but if I was not connected to the internet, if I was on a plane and wanted to play a game on this, if you're not connected, it's a mobile device, right? If you're not connected, you want to be able to do that, and it has the power to do it.
Well, maybe that's a 5G thing.
I don't know. If you're underground or on the subway or in the air.
In a submarine.
Right.
In the subway, like before when I moved to New York, like there was no cell phone service in subways. You know, that didn't happen until a couple of weeks after or a couple of years after. So that was like 2012 or something. So we want cloud gaming to be the kind of end all and be all. But right now people just want an easy way to like get their little gaming fix. So I guess Apple is leaning in on mobile, right? And they're extending mobile to desktop, to everything, to even Apple TV. But I'm a little disappointed. Like proper desktop gaming is not really what they're doing at all.
Yeah. So it's complicated. I mean, the Apple Epic thing cut them off from the number one game engine. They can't use the Unreal Engine because that's an Epic thing, and they don't like Epic. So you've got to use Unity, which is, kind of a weak second. Unity might get better. I don't know. I feel like Apple, it's almost as if Apple doesn't even care. I don't know. And should they care? Why should they care?
Beyond mobile games, I don't know.
They own mobile, really, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. They own mobile because they own the platform.
Oh, but it's just such a waste. I mean, it is just such a waste of power.
All that power.
To not do it. All that power. Oh, and the other thing is what you could see is you could see it coming in the back door because these M1 Macs can run iOS titles. Mm-hmm. And if you had a developer who created a killer game on iOS, that then when you ran it on a Mac, it ran like a game on a Mac, that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
I think some of the Apple Arcade titles have done that. I know Fantasian, which is the game from the Final Fantasy director or creator, right? That is a beautiful RPG, and it works well on mobile. But when you bring it to like a big to a desktop, it like runs in 4K, I believe, or has 4K assets. So they do scale quite a bit.
Let's take a little break. Lots more to talk about when we come back. Devinder Hardwar is here. He's the senior editor at Engadget and the host of the Filmcast. It feels like content is starting to ramp up. Seems really good. Yeah.
We're also in the middle of Sundance right now. So for the past like couple days, I've been watching several movies every night because I'm just like consuming as much Sundance stuff as I can. But
what are you excited about?
There's a couple things. There's this movie I just saw called After Yang by the director Koga Nada, which is fantastic. It's about a family that loses their helper kind of android, and it basically dies at the beginning of the movie, and the entire movie is them like
whatever will we
with
do
that. it's amazing and beautiful.
I want to see that. Do they grieve it?
They like it is a grieving movie about the influence this thing has had in the family. It stars Colin Farrell too, and I love like sad broody Colin Farrell in like good serious stuff. So, and it's also like it's sci-fi, so like there's this great like vision of the future of like self-driving cars with plants and bamboo.
What's it
so
called
check
again?
That out. That's gonna be After Yang.
After Yang is the robot, I guess. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I really want to see that. Did you see The Power of the Dog? Do you think that was good?
I did. I loved it. Yeah. I love Jane Campion. She's weird.
I like her. She's weird. But, yeah. It's weird. It starts off as a Western. Turns out it's not. It's a thriller.
Hey, it was a Western thriller. Sure.
Western thriller.
It's an awkward Western.
It's awkward as hell.
Yes.
And I'm not sure.
I had a hard time watching it.
Yeah, me too. I'm not sure Benedict Cumberbatch really is a convincing cowboy, to be honest. But I'm sure it's going to go. I'm sure it's going to win an Oscar. I'm sure it's going to win an Oscar. That's anyway. I told Lisa because we're both looking, scratching our heads, saying, "Did we like that? I don't think we liked that. Did we? I don't know." And then I said, "But it will be an Oscar contender. I'm sure of it."
Yes.
The other one, and I know this was your most recent episode. The Apple Plus's Macbeth.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
No.
Oh my God.
Beautiful. Yes.
No? Beautiful.
Beautiful.
The
yes.
Witches.
No, the witches, no. The biggest problem I had with it, I love the black and white. I love how it's shot. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. Everything's in tight close-ups. Shakespeare was not made for tight close-ups. I'm sorry. It's theater. Everything's tight close-ups. I didn't like that. And I felt like it hurt the actors' performances, frankly.
I think the transition from... with Denzel Washington from kind of a reasonable but brooding contender for the throne to a madman was like just too, like someone threw a switch too easily. It happened.
It moves a little too briskly. Yeah.
They're great actors. It's some of the best actors.
Yes, yes.
And I didn't feel like the acting was very good. So I don't.
Well, it also was, if you step back and look at it and kind of don't think Shakespeare, it really looks like a Coen Brothers movie.
Oh yeah, you could tell it's.
I mean, the characters, the cinematography,
the flat affect. Yeah.
Yes.
The ultra violence at times. Yeah.
See, I like Macbeth, but I guess maybe that's probably the part of the problem is I have all these preconceived notions of what Macbeth. Don't look up. Not a great movie. Fascinating cultural piece. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
My money for the Oscars is on Pig.
I loved Pig.
Pig was a great movie.
We talked about that last time you were on, I think. I love Pig.
Oh, it was great. It was a great movie.
Nicolas Cage as the deranged master chef who's left society until...
He's not deranged. He's the sanest one of all.
Until they kill his truffle-hunting pig, and he comes into town saying, I want my pig.
They yeah. kidnap the pig, Leo. They kidnap the pig.
They don't intend to kill him. They don't intend to.
That's a spoiler.
No,
a spoiler.
I think it's in.
Nick Cage will be nominated for Best Actor. I really hope he would win it because I just thought that was a phenomenal performance and so withheld. You know,
He wasn't chewing the scenery. Matrix Resurrections.
Loved it.
Loved it.
Yep.
Interesting.
Loved it. It was my number one movie of last year just because of the sheer joy it gave me. I love a movie that is not made for anybody else, you know, like it's very specific. It's a Matrix fan movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not all Matrix fans, you know, there are degrees of them.
I loved the first Matrix. Didn't like the sequels. This felt like it was another sequel. It didn't really click for me, but I there were some good parts. It was some good stuff. Great action.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I can't think of a movie that has reckoned with like the history of franchises and what we expect from
them. It's always hard.
What Hollywood expects from them. Yeah. Like that is such a smart movie in terms of what it's doing and what it's wrestling with. Yeah. And I love the Wachowskis too. Like their sensibility, their show Sense8 on Netflix is beautiful.
I really enjoyed Sense8. Is that coming back or is that over? It didn't seem like it finished. Yeah.
It's pretty much done. They had like a movie kind of wrapping things up, but so many Sense8 people are in Matrix Resurrections, and just thematically, what that show was about.
It's very similar to Sense8. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make this the movie segment.
Movies are good. I can do this all day.
Whenever DeVinder's on, I love talking about this stuff. Obviously, Dwight, you don't mind either. So.
Oh, no. I love it.
I will throw a shout out there. The Jesse Eisenberg movie that just premiered at Sundance, When You Finish Saving the World, is one of the most insufferable things I've ever seen.
Oh, that's
too bad. I will just put a red flag against that. How about that?
Not a fan, actually, of Mr. Eisenberg, so I don't think I'll miss that. Insufferable.
He can't be good, but,
quite a word. Oof. Insufferable.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. If you like this kind of thing, The Film Cast.
The Film Cast at thefilmcast.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love it. To me, I could listen all day. Let's take a little break, talk about our sponsor. We'll come back with a lot more, Devendra. Dwight, I'll ask you about your life too later.
All right.
It's not all about Devendra. Hey, I do want to talk about our absolute favorite VPN. I think you know if I say that, you're going to say, oh, yeah, Leo loves ExpressVPN, of course. Honestly, there are so many reasons to run a VPN, but I think it used to be about security, right? And it's still about security. And then I think for some people, it's about watching Netflix in Japan or England. And it's still about that. All that stuff still works. But increasingly, it's become a privacy issue. And I think when you're looking at what big tech is up to and you really say, how can I keep these companies from knowing everything I'm doing? There's a lot of things people want to do to protect themselves. And I think a VPN, it's not the only thing you should do, but it's one of the big things. The idea that a single company might control 90% of the internet searches, do your email, runs your phone, has a device in your house with a microphone. It's pretty amazing. And in at least the case of Google, they make money by exploiting your personal data. That they're very clear about that. That's how Google makes money, selling ads based on what they know about you. Maybe you, like many of our listeners, want to put a little layer of protection between your online activity and these big tech companies who do literally want to know everything you do. That's why you might want to check out a good VPN. You might want to check out ExpressVPN. Now, something I've always talked about with VPNs is, you know, you're just passing the buck. You've got to trust the VPN you use. It's very important. Well, I can tell you, you can trust them. Independent audits have proven it. They care so much, they've created something they call the trusted server technology. You're running in memory in a sandboxed process that literally cannot write to the hard drive. And as soon as you log out, it disappears, poof, and so does every trace of your visit. And again, that has been proven so by independent auditors, so you can trust that. Think about how much of your life you're putting on the internet. Every site you visit, every video you watch, every message you send is tracked, is data mined. But when you're running ExpressVPN, your IP address is not yours. The IP address you use to emerge into the public internet is theirs. So it makes it so much harder to trace and sell to advertisers. You might use incognito mode in your browser, but that just means somebody on your machine can't see what you're up to. You better believe the browser company knows what you're up to. Your carrier knows what you're up to, unless you're using ExpressVPN. It also has the benefit of encrypting 100% of your internet data, so you're safe from eavesdroppers on the network. And the best part about ExpressVPN is they invest. They invest in their business. When you get a free VPN, you've really got to wonder who is the product. Who are you, the customer, or are they selling your information? With ExpressVPN, it's not expensive, a little less than $7 a month, but that's important. That transaction means you're the customer, you're not the product. That's why they protect your privacy. That's why they make sure you've got enough speed to watch high def video. They don't slow down your connection. It's one of the reasons it's the number one VPN service. Mashable says so. Tech Radar says so. And it's so easy to use. You download the app, you put it on your phone, your computer, you tap a button, you're protected. You can even put it on your router, protect your whole household. And I can tell you this, no one will complain, oh, what happened? Our internet's so slow, because ExpressVPN, again, invests in the network. I've turned it on my router and no one even knows. I took ExpressVPN to Mexico. I was using it for security as much as privacy. Stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Protect yourself with a VPN I trust to keep me safe online. Visit expressvpn.com/twit. That's expressvpn.com/twit. And you can get an extra 3 months free. Go to expressvpn.com/twit now to learn more. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for supporting This Week in Tech. And, of course, thank you, Twit listeners, for supporting us by using that address so they know you saw it here, expressvpn.com/twit. Fascinating. Have you been following the FAA-FCC airline battle that's been going on over 5G? This week it came to a head, of course, the Verizon and AT&T, who, between the two of them, spent billions of dollars for this frequency in an FCC auction. We're about to turn on those 5G towers, the C-band towers. FAA, airline manufacturers, airlines and airplane manufacturers say, wait a minute, you're going to break our altimeters. Wait a minute, planes are going to come out of the sky. They put a hold on it. AT&T, Verizon, FAA said, can you put a hold on it? They said, well, we'll give you a week or two. Anyway, it's starting to roll out. Wednesday was the day. So far, no planes have fallen out of the sky, but maybe some planes aren't flying. I'll read you. It's very tempting to blame the manufacturers or blame the FAA or blame the FCC. I'll read you something that shows you there's enough blame to to go around on this one. This is from JUCADRP on Reddit. It was one of the Reddit best ofs, and I thought it was the best thing I've read explaining this. Airplanes are equipped with radar altimeters. They use radar on the frequency between 4,200 and 4,400 megahertz. These 5G towers, these C-band towers, are 3,700, 3,980 megahertz. There's no overlap. Mm-hmm. But... and this is the problem. There's a filter in order to protect the frequencies that the radar is using so it doesn't get interfered with by other. There's a filter. But the filter is set because thanks to a decades-old design. No one else was using this frequency to overlap with this 5G frequency. It doesn't need to, but it does. So 5G radio could confuse these altimeters. That could be, of course, a big hazard for an airplane. So, in fact, there's a here from 5G Technology World is a graph that shows these bands. So the altimeter, can you show that, John? There you go. The altimeter is this yellow thing. This is the frequency it needs. This is where the 5G band is. Unfortunately, this green line, that's the filter. So because of this old, and it is admittedly an antiquated design, and we should point out that these 5G towers, this spec is 10 years old. They knew this was coming, but they never fixed the altimeters.
Yeah.
It's
infuriating.
Yeah. So basically, the altimeter opens a channel to listen to radar, but it ends up listening not just to radar, but to 5G. At the time they were designed, there was nothing there. There is now. And in fact, modern filters could easily be put on these things that would eliminate this problem entirely. This guy in Reddit writes, the aviation industry had time to retrofit their airplanes, and now they are, sorry to be blunt, playing dumb. Mm-hmm. They know they can hold the nations hostage by saying this will disrupt flights in the middle of a pandemic. Obviously, safety is paramount, but carriers paid $81 billion for these frequencies because they were not in use. So they paid $81 billion for exclusive use of these frequencies. The aviation industry is basically arguing they want to take over more than they need, more than they're even allocated to operate these altimeters. So, then to defend the aviation industry, one of the reasons air travel is so safe these days is because they are not, you know, throwing stuff in willy-nilly. And so you can't just go change all those altimeters. And then, you know, you want to test it and so forth. So you can't change it overnight. They have had a little more.
If only we had 10 years to test it.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah. I've been seeing 5G demos since 2012, you know. Yeah. So it is it's ridiculous that, like, this thing, like, the point where these carriers are also getting to where they can actually get the fast speeds they've been promising for so long, like, this is apparently a big roadblock for them. It's just kind of hilarious.
This C-band, you know? This is an ultra-wideband.
No, this is kind of in between
mid-band.
Sub-6 yep. and millimeter wave. I wrote about this in my column last week about what it meant for AT&T and Verizon, which are the two that are using it. They've kind of essentially been behind T-Mobile because T-Mobile has a mid-band that it got from Sprint, the Sprint acquisition, and it's been able to offer these speeds that AT&T and Verizon can't for some time.
And T-Mobile's C-band does not interfere with altimeters?
No, it isn't C-band.
It's not in that band.
It's at a different frequency, right? It's at a different frequency. T-Mobile has bought some C-band, but they're not going to set it up till 2023. But it is, you know, in Houston, a lot of this stuff comes here first.
Right.
A lot of, because it's so flat here. So it's a good testing ground. And T-Mobile, Sprint had one of its first stand-ups of its service, and it was remarkably fast. T-Mobile now is very fast. And when they switched it on here, on Wednesday, I began hearing from, readers on Twitter and Facebook saying that they were starting to see some speeds on their compatible AT&T and Verizon phones that now could kind of match in the center area the stuff that T-Mobile is doing.
How fast? So, when you say fast, I mean, ultra wideband, we're talking a gigabit. But that's
or
not,
more.
Or more.
Or more.
But this is not that fast. How fast is this?
They're saying for C-band, it's up to about a gigabit. At best. When I was talking to Verizon for this story, they said that kind of what they want to hit is about 300 megabits.
That's plenty.
That is plenty. Mm-hmm. And I have an iPhone 13
Pro Max. I doubt
Pro
my phone
Max.
Could go faster than that, to be honest.
Right. Well, on my iPhone 13 Pro Max, I have T-Mobile, and I have seen download speeds up to 700 megabits on my iPhone.
So you can go that fast.
Yes. And typically, and what's really interesting on T-Mobile is that if you're down to like two bars, I still see like 250 and 300 megabits when I'm picking up one of their
So what is this? Signals. What is this change? I mean, honestly, you probably don't need that kind of speed. Even at home.
It changes it for the future. For as we were talking about gaming, mobile gaming, mm-hmm. if you're doing streaming gaming, it changes it in terms of
potentially. With gaming, it's not so much speed as latency, right? Is this also a lower latency?
Well, and 5G promises lower latency. We haven't seen a lot of that yet. Yeah. You do see it on millimeter wave. There's a millimeter
wave only goes 80 feet from the tower.
It goes 80 feet from the tower.
So no one's
line of sight, baby. Yeah.
It can't get through trees.
or rain.
But there's a millimeter wave tower about two blocks from my house, and I walked over to it with a Verizon phone and stood under it and got 3 gigabits down.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's beautiful, but it's beautiful right there.
At this point, right there, yeah, but yeah. But also at this point, I mean, that's just a number. We don't, I mean, yeah, it's great, but it's like saying I have a car that go 500 miles an hour.
Yeah. And you have to ride around the block under speeding limits. And
I mean, it is more bandwidth than you need now. There may be uses coming for it,
like vehicle to vehicle communications, things like that.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Right, but but you know, in the beginning, when you had your first LTE phones, nobody predicted Uber. And nobody predicted that Netflix would go where it went. So there are things that are out there that eventually could end up, you know, making use of that. At the moment, no. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. I'm sure this airline thing will be worked out at some point. Probably this is mostly...
Well, for now, it's working. I mean, there are no airplanes falling out of the sky.
Yeah, no, because they aren't turning on towers within 2 miles of big airports.
Which is fine, because you can still use regular 5G and even millimeter wave in airports. A lot of airports have millimeter wave installed in.
Some, for instance, I think Etihad, there are a couple of airlines that cannot fly their 777s to the U.S. for this reason. And so it is some impingement on traffic, not a lot, but some. I think probably this is more like the airplane manufacturers want the phone industry to pay them to fix the altimeters.
Yes.
But
yes.
But that's a good compromise. Just don't put the towers within 2 miles of an airport. Everything's going smoothly
so far. You know, the biggest complaint I've heard is from people who have AT&T and Verizon phones and saying, "Oh, I thought it would be faster."
Yeah,
you know, so it is heartbreaking. Like after all this buildup,
so much
we are kind of stuck with speeds that are only slightly faster than LTE, like most of the time, and then. Once in a blue moon, you're in an area and, like, you know, Mercury crosses the horizon and you get, you get really fast millimeter wave. And then that's it. You'll never see it again.
So. Well, C-band fixes that. C-band fixes that for AT&T and Verizon. If you're a T-Mobile customer in an area that they have added it, and it's in a lot of urban areas, you are seeing that already. And it's the only use I've seen for it is I was away from home, and I knew I was going to be in a place where I wasn't going to have cellular service or good cellular service, and I was getting the 5G UC, which is ultra capacity that it calls for. And I was getting like 500 megabits down, so I quickly downloaded a couple of episodes of something on Netflix, and I got it, you know, in just about 30 seconds. And then when I got there, I had it. It's down on my phone, and that was really handy. Yeah. But that's kind of like I did it.
I mean, one thing people have been talking about is like doing your home internet could just be via cellular eventually. You know, the way the phone service has gone.
Well,
and
yes,
that could be really interesting for some places.
Isn't Verizon actually rolling that out?
Verizon and T-Mobile both have 5G based home internet services. Verizon, the first 5G Verizon home service was launched here in Houston, again, because of the flat area. It was based on millimeter wave. You have to have kind of the router sits in your window, basically.
You're two blocks from that tower. You can't do it, though, right?
No, I can't.
You're too far away.
Actually, there's one a little closer now, but it is there's a crepe myrtle tree between me. I'm serious. There's a crepe myrtle that
damn the crepe myrtle. It. Damn it!
Chop it down!
We used to have DirecTV, and there was a tree in the winter. It was fine, but there's a tree that would get very leafy right in front of the dish. So one day I climbed up and I literally carved a U in the tree. I think chopped down the tree. I just put a U where the leaves were so that the dish could see through the tree.
Yes, exactly.
Not the best topiary ever, but it got the job done.
And T-Mobile has also has a 5G service. They've had some problems with the Nokia-based radios that they're using for it. It looks almost like a mini version of the old Mac Pro trash can computer. And I had it and it had a difficult time wasn't very stable. And supposedly they are replacing those. But I was getting probably with that about 200 megabits down. You know, on my Comcast DOCSIS 3.1 internet service, I've got gigabit service, and the fastest I can get maybe is about 800 megabits. On my phone, it's like 400. But with C-band, I mean, with mid-band on T-Mobile, when I'm out and about, I get 700 megabits down. It's faster than what I get in my living room.
That's wild. That's absolutely wild. There are also other companies like Starry Internet that are doing home-based internet based on 5G. That is from the former Aereo guy. If you'll remember.
Aereo. I loved Aereo. They were great.
So
Starry like has been trying. They are in a couple cities right now. A lot of people are experimenting with this. I'm really wondering, like, the AR glasses we're all hoping to see in 5 years.
They would
like,
need 5G.
They need to be connected. Right. Yeah. They can't just rely on our phones. They like have to be smart on their own. So I feel like that is the future we're kind of like laying out there.
What a world we live in. It's happened so fast. By the way, I should point out, these 5G C-band rollouts have happened in 40 countries so far. In Japan, they've rolled out, this is according to Ars Technica, and in fact, they are deployed at 4,100 megahertz. So there's just 100 megahertz guard band between 5G operations and those altimeters, and there have been no claims of interference. So I call foul on all of this.
It reminds me a little bit of the turn off your devices before landing thing.
Yeah.
You know, remember Nick Bilton, who was kind of on a tear and campaigned on this?
I remember. He won. He got it changed, right?
Right. And so you can leave your Wi-Fi on. They still want you to turn off your cellular modems on your phones. But I think a lot of people don't.
My guess is actually
planes aren't falling out of the sky.
The cellulars on your phone should be turned off only because you're flying 600 miles an hour and the
you're
hand
losing
offs,
all your battery life.
The hand drops,
yeah, that's right,
brrr, as you fly across the country are not good for anybody. So
it should be, tell people it's good for you. Save your battery life. Don't, like, it's not really about plane safety.
Yeah it's not plane safety. Right. And it's probably has something to do with cell carriers who don't want to have all these handoffs as people fly over.
If you're flying that far over, can you get
absolutely
a signal?
Sure. Totally. You're only a few miles high. 8 miles high. You probably can't get ultra wideband, however. I don't think you can get that up there. Actually, this is, now I'm starting to get the calls. I had a guy call me today, said, I just got a phone in the mail because from AT&T, because they say my phone's not going to work in a month. AT&T is on 02222022, February 22nd of this year, turning off the 3G towers. He has a Galaxy S7. I said, well, wait, that uses LTE. But turns out AT&T is using 3G for call signaling to make the connection. So your voice...
On that phone?
Uh-huh. So it'll just stop working. So they sent him like a $20 crap phone, unsolicited. I said, you should probably just get a newer... but this is going to be... Get ready. This is a month from now. A lot of people with older... Not even that... An S7 isn't that old.
Well, and one of the big things that doesn't get talked about a lot is a lot of home security systems use a cellular modem that talks on 3G. Because a lot of them were set up like that, and there's not a lot of 4G ones out there, and they're going to have to upgrade their security system.
Yeah. A lot of cars have 3G modems.
OnStar. A lot of the OnStar uses 3G.
So that's the next moment of outrage. I just got to thought I'd give you a warning. 2022.
Every decade, we'll just have a wave of devices that kind of die, basically.
Well, that's right. That's the future, isn't it? From now on.
Yeah.
This is the way it's going to be from now on.
We lost all the Blackberries. They're all gone.
That happened a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's okay. That's okay. Let's see. What else? Intel is going to build new president, new factory. Intel's going to build a massive, the largest chip factory ever in Ohio, they say. They will build two new semiconductor fabs on a 1,000-acre site where Intel will research, develop, and manufacture its latest chips. And this is really part of the Intel transition from being an IDF, an integrated design foundry, where they design and make their own chips, to becoming kind of almost two companies, a design company like NVIDIA or ARM or Apple, for that matter, and then a fabricator, a chip builder like TSMC. They want to do both. And so these new plants, I think, are part of their Pat Gelsinger's mission to start selling their chip manufacturing capacity to other companies, including, they say, aspirationally, Apple. Very aspirationally. Construction begins this year. The plant should be operational by 2025. So this is, it's really going to be interesting to watch. You know, traditionally, companies making this kind of pivot fail. It's a hard thing to do. And the one, you know, prime example is Microsoft, which has really made an amazing pivot and is actually a stronger, better company because they moved from being the Windows Office company to being the cloud company. But it'll be very interesting to see if Intel can make this transition. Ben Thompson wrote about it in his Stratechery column. In fact, that's where I get most of my understanding of what the hell's going on in Intel, because it's very, very confusing. But he actually years ago said Intel should split into two companies. This integrated solution is not going to be a good solution. And it turns out he was right. It was one of the reasons Intel struggled with new technologies. They got ossified, fossilized, stuck. And because TSMC didn't have to worry about, you know, being an integrated company, they were able to leapfrog them. But now Gelsinger has at least decided he's going to try to change Intel's tune. You think they'll succeed, Devendra?
You know, I've been covering Intel for a while, and AMD and all the big chip companies. It does seem like they've been affected by the innovator's dilemma, you know, for a while, I think at least within the last decade. And now we're seeing AMD come up with like much, much better mobile chips and desktop chips. Like the competition is heating up. And also with what Apple's doing, I think Intel has a chance of doing something really interesting here. It's a big bet. And this is kind of the thing Intel has needed to make. We just recently saw their 12th gen chips, which have this new like hybrid design, which I think is a really interesting idea. And that is something like we first saw on
Is this that big little thing where you have efficiency cores and performance cores? And this
is
what Apple has done so well with.
And Snapdragon chips as well. Like Qualcomm, so mobile chips have been doing that. It is interesting to see that come to laptops, you know, and desktops. And Intel's leaning in on that. AMD still has the lead on like actual manufacturing, making them in smaller sizes. So Intel's just kind of racing to catch up at that level. They kind of have to do something like this. You know, it's a big bet, and this company just can't keep doing what it's doing right now when Apple can just build mobile chips that blow pretty much all their desktop hardware out of the water. I can't tell if it'll work, but we need capacity. I think the big problem right now that we're facing with the whole global chip industry is that we've relied so much on a couple companies that make all the chips. And if something happens in that pipeline, like we're all kind of, so many industries just kind of like start to fall apart. So I think it's smart for Intel. Clearly there's a demand for this stuff. And I think like we're going to have more and more of a demand for anything that requires chips right now. So yeah, it should pay off, even if it's not Intel's own chips being built there.
One of the things that Thompson points out in his article on Stratechery is that Intel actually ended up going to TSMC saying, can you make our chips?
Yep.
Which was kind of crazy, because here you are, this is your biggest competitor, and you're actually giving them capital to continue to whoop your ass. But it actually was maybe part of this transition to, you know, kind of two different businesses, the design business and the fab business. And the design business needs to get its designs made somewhere, and it doesn't have to always be an Intel company. It'll be very interesting. I think, are they building in Texas too? I think they are.
They're building in Arizona. Well. So they also announced like $20 billion there. That is really interesting. I'm really interested to see what happens down here in the South too. Like American manufacturing is something that we've kind of just ignored for so long. And now that, you know, we're thinking hard about like where stuff is being built and what we can invest in here now too, right? Like they're still trying to pass the CHIPS bill, which hasn't gone through the House yet, I believe. So like there are still things we could be doing, certainly down here in the South. After Rivian announced that they're going to be building stuff here in Georgia, it's going to be really exciting to see like where manufacturing moves around in the U.S.
Yeah, in Texas, it's AMD in Austin, and Samsung also is going to do chips in Austin. And one of the things that, you know, that I think is really interesting, and I'm curious about how this will work out, is if freeing up Intel from having married manufacturing with design, if it will accelerate the innovation in their design. You know,
that's
Intel,
the theory, right?
Yes, right, right. But how would that work? Mm-hmm. What exactly is the mechanism there that would cause that to happen?
Well, I think the premise, at least Ben's premise, is they were being held back because their fab capabilities were not developing at the same speed as their design capabilities. So they couldn't design future chips. That's why they ended up getting fab at TSMC. And remember, Intel couldn't get below 10 nanometers. I think they still are struggling to get below 10
nanometers. Took years,
yeah. Yeah. So in a way, whatever their design teams wanted to do, they were very much limited by what their fabs could make. So this is probably smart to decouple the two. Mm-hmm. Now let's see what they've got good designers. Gelsinger designed the 486. Let's not forget. He's a designer by trade. He understands this.
My first CPU. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will lock that.
Well, it's the one thing about this is that if their limitation was the fabs and their capabilities impacting their design, where will Intel, the design company, go? Aren't they more
TSMC?
But TSMC won't have the capacity.
They may not.
Them and everything
Apple
else.
Buys up all their capacity. Yeah.
TSMC's so what also happens? Building more too.
They Everyone's are building a lot more. More. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But but what is to keep Intel from just keep going back to Intel now as an independent company and still having that limitation?
Well, that's. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of the potential pitfalls. And as I said, these pivots traditionally don't go so well.
Right.
There's a long history of failed pivots like this. But
or splits. You know, one of the most interesting splits right now, I think, is HP and HPE.
That's gone great, hasn't it?
That has gone great. HPE.
Why are you laughing? HP,
yeah.
It has.
I mean, look at the HP's well. Making its best. The HP division is making its best PCs ever. I don't know how well HPE is doing the enterprise division, but my sense is it's not doing badly. Why did you laugh? Is it bad?
I'm thinking back to like HPE from several years ago.
I don't know.
Oh, no. No, yeah. they've made a good recovery. They've gotten pretty good with selling cloud computing servers there. They sell a variety of services. They have moved here to Houston. The company is now based in Houston. And what's interesting is a lot of the people, the older executives, are from the old Compaq days. When they were building servers here. Wow. So it's kind of been, in fact, Antonio Neri, who is the CEO, worked here and was part of the Compaq server group and HP when HP had it. And so it's kind of a homecoming for them. They're doing pretty well from what I can tell.
That's good. I'm remembering that awful deal they made, remember, with autonomy.
Yes.
So it's like that is the last major headline in my head. But yeah
that was sure HP. That's
Leo Apotheker, and that was why HP and HPE split, really.
Yeah. Split, right.
That was That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Right. I'm looking at HPE's stock over the last 5 years, and it's pretty flat. It's not going through the roof. It looks a lot like Microsoft did before its pivot. But I do have to say, at least from the consumer side, HP's making the best computers they've made in years. Really much nicer, much more interesting design.
Really good. Better than like what Lenovo and
Absolutely.
Some other companies are doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lenovo has gone real downhill.
Yeah. So maybe the story really is that they got rid of that lead balloon called HPE and they could finally do their
They got rid of the enterprise.
I feel like that's kind of it. At least that's the way I've been seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's really the story. Let's take a little break. We'll have more Devinder Hardwar in Gadget. Wonderful to have you. How's the baby?
She's good. She's 3. She turned 3 in October.
We try to do this show during nap time.
during, I mean, no, it's dinner time now. So okay. My wife has to do dinner and baby put down. So oh, it is, sorry. It's always rough, but my wife also likes your work, Leo. So, you know, she knows.
Oh, that's nice of her. It helps put the baby to sleep.
Anything for Leo. That's, right. That's the right. Motto.
It puts the baby to sleep. We know the real reason. Dwight Silverman also here. Are you back at the Chronicle? I see your byline at the Chronicle again. What's going on, Dwight?
Well, I'm doing, I am freelancing my column. So it's still there once a week. And it's essentially what it was before I retired and then went to Forbes for 7 months.
Your retirement is,
I know.
It's like Frank Sinatra. I think
I have on most of my social media bios, not good at retirement. And
that's
true.
You. Good for you.
That's true. Well, and, but the other fun thing is that, you know, I have found that I am incredibly busy with my free time. It's not like I'm like sitting around, you know, binging Netflix. Although when we're done, I got to go finish watching Ozark. But I'm incredibly busy with life. And so it's pretty wonderful.
You know, it's funny because I talk a lot about retiring and, you know, I'm 65. It's when you would normally take the gold
watch.
We're
the same age. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Get the little banquet. They'd say you were great for the last 40 years. Goodbye. And then I'm kind of looking at this idea and now I'm thinking, what would I do?
That'd be boring.
If you're still having fun, you know, and you still,
this isn't exactly work. I mean, it's not like I'm digging ditches or, you know, laying railroad tracks. I'm just sitting here in a chair gassing. So
it's not even that what this is.
That's what this is. Yeah. It's gassing. Not even as hard as writing. It's like just. So I'm figuring, you know, OK, as long as people will have me, I'll probably end up doing this for a long time. I'm sorry, John. John wants to retire, but we're going to stick around for a little bit. Anyway, if you want to see all of Dwight's writing, he's got it all under one roof now, which is kind of cool. This is Authory, authory.com/dsilverman. And so you are keeping busy. There's quite a few articles here. So you
this is a subscription service.
Subscription for you, not for the
reader. For me. Right. But there's no ads on it. You can go in there. It actually will set up as like an email
alert
when I have a new story. It aggregates from all of my past work and anything I do now. If you're a freelancer who writes at a lot of different places, it is a great way to have everything all in one place. I'm not getting any money for saying that. It's kind of a problem.
Money. Yeah.
Yes. It was a problem I had and they solved it for me.
Nice. Well, I'm really glad. It actually is a great solution. If Dvorak had done that, it'd be page after page after page. All right. Thank you. It's good to have Dwight and Devendra here. Our show today, always pleased to welcome New Relic to our show as our sponsor. I've known about New Relic since back in the day when they were a Ruby on Rails solution. These days, New Relic is just a must-have for anybody who's got to keep a stack running. You know how that feels, that 9 o'clock call or maybe 3 a.m. call when you're kind of winding down, maybe watching a little Ozark and the phone rings and something's down, something's broken. And you're going, what is it? What could it be? Is it that fix I just pushed? Is it the back end? Is it the front end? Is it global? Is it the server? Is it the network? Is it the cloud provider? Do we have slow running queries? And now suddenly you've got a team scrambling. They're going from tool to tool. They're slacking you. They're calling you. They're buzzing your beeper. Try to figure out what's going on. It's just like an anthill that somebody just kicked. If only you had a system for figuring out what's gone wrong. Weirdly enough, such a thing exists. They call it observability. New Relic just did a report. Only half of all organizations are implementing observability for their network and systems. And it's a huge issue that you can solve with New Relic. New Relic is an umbrella for 16 different monitoring products. You'd buy them separately, maybe. You'd try to make them work together, but you don't have to. With New Relic, you'll get application monitoring, APM. So you can build New Relic into your tooling across the board, apps, microservices. In fact, it's so good that if you have an error in your code, it can tell you the line number. It can tell you, you know, what your stack's doing. You can get an instant feedback, which makes it much easier to fix what's wrong. You get, if you use Kubernetes, you'll love Pixie for observability. Distributed tracing, so you can see all your traces without management headaches, find and fix issues fast. Network performance monitoring, stop guessing where performance issues start. Ditch data silos for a system-wide correlated view. It's so much more. There's 16 tools. That's just four of them. And I love it that you can know instantly exactly. Look at the companies that use New Relic. 14,000 companies. DoorDash, GitHub, Cloudflare, Atlassian, Epic Games. Everybody loves New Relic because it solves that problem of the 9 p.m. phone call. You push a button, see what's wrong, and fix it and go back to Ozark. Or whatever you're doing. You could be knitting. I don't care. Whether you run a cloud-native startup or a Fortune 500 company, it takes 5 minutes to start New Relic up, get it going in your environment, and get ready for this. No credit card required. You get 100 gigabytes of data free forever. And for many people, that's plenty. If you need more, you can get more. But you really want to get New Relic. Before that 9 p.m. call, it's just out there waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does. Sign up at newrelic.com/twit, newrelic.com/twit. And if you're a boss and you want to see some smiles, ask your team, hey, what, guys, do we need New Relic? Oh, boy. They'll go, yes, we thought you'd never ask. Or more likely, they'll say, yeah, we've been using it. You want to get more? NewRelic.com/twit, NEWRELIC. NewRelic.com/TWIT. I love this company. I love these guys, and they do such a good job, and you definitely need it. New Relic. Okay. Oh, I wanted to ask you, I'm asking everybody, this is Pixel 6 week. We got the January update. I know, Devendra, you've covered it. I see, Dwight, you've covered it. Has it fixed your... Personally, I love the Pixel 6. I've not had any problems. Fingerprint reader works great. Never stops, never crashes. I just love it. But everybody I know hates it. How's your Pixel 6 these days, Devendra?
I actually don't have one. I think I wrote up a piece of that news. But I want to play with it because it looks like the most interesting phone Google has made.
Such a camera.
Years. Yeah. Yeah.
I honestly think there's hardware issues or a QC issue because I don't have the problems a lot of people report. Mary Jo Foley says the fingerprint reader doesn't work for her. I had somebody call today on the radio show, said, yeah, it doesn't even ask for a fingerprint. It just sits there.
I had a review unit and I did not have any of the problems with the review unit that that other folks had. I did not get it from Google and I got it from a carrier, but I'm very, you know, I did not have any problems with it. I liked the phone. I had to send it back so I don't get a chance to see what the updates are like. And by the way, if you hear any crinkling or other sounds, my cat got into the room and he's in.
That's okay.
I heard some meowing. Yeah.
Yes. He's in the room and he'll be quiet, but
that's
he's in
okay.
This,
we love
this
critters.
Kind of tube. So there's a little crinkling.
Oh, I hear it.
And he may jump on me. He likes to get like right here.
Are you actually so in the cat's? I think you're in the cat's room.
I am in the cat's room, and that's why they're mad. That's why they were trying
it's
to get
his
in.
Room.
This is my wife's office, and and when she is in here, they're like they sit on her lap, or and she's a psychotherapist and does Zoom sessions, and so her clients are used to her. But you may see Milo on my chest.
Okay. Well, all right. So I guess nothing to say. I mean, the January update is out. It's rolled out. We'll talk more about it, I'm sure, on Twig. I'm curious because Ant Pruitt's had a lot of problems. I'm curious if it fixed any of his problems. This was the update that was supposed to come out last month.
It's such a shame because this was supposed to be the iPhone killer for them, right? Like, it so much seemed good. I was like, as an iOS user, I was like really jealous of some of the things I was seeing on that phone. And then this is happening. And it just kind of reminds me that Google's so bad at consumer products sometimes. Like, so many things are so bad at it. I have a Nest thermostat that is always losing its internet connection. I don't know why. So, yeah.
It's so frustrating.
It's not an iPhone killer. It's a good phone. It is probably the best phone that Google has done. But it is not an iPhone killer, mainly because while Google has created a really decent piece of hardware, and Android 12 is interesting. Android 12 is just not as easy to use as iOS still. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to pick it up and kind of do the things that Google touts isn't necessarily always the simplest thing to do.
I honestly think that's the selling point. Believe it or not, the iPhone is just what the iPhone is. The iPhone is what it is. Don't mess with it because you can't.
Yeah.
Although that's not the case now.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
That's not the case now. I mean, I think you can really customize an iPhone now.
Yeah.
I mean, right
now. But not to the degree that you can.
No, not to the degree. But it's beginning with kind of this stuff with shortcuts and the ability to change even the look of the phone so it looks completely different.
Shortcuts have made the iPhone a lot harder to use.
Right.
You know what else made the iPhone harder to use? Is this new focus feature. I felt terrible the other night. Lisa's desperately trying to figure out how to only allow text messages from her son. Michael's down the hall from us, but he has COVID. We've sealed his door with caulking. So we want to be, if he needs something, we want to know how to, slide something under the door or whatever. And it's like, we're at bedtime. I'm going to sleep. She says, I can't figure out this focus thing. Could you help me? I'm saying, the tech guy doesn't take calls after 9 p.m. Go away.
Helpline is closed.
Helpline is closed. I don't want to help you. But it's not because I don't want to help her. It's because it is hard to figure out. I can't figure it out for the life of me.
The focus mode stuff is super unintuitive. What I'm saying is more like the iPhone is a perfect expression of Apple's hardware and software. I kind of felt like the Pixel 6 was going to be that, even if it's not.
Yeah. I mean, but that's why I like Android, because it is very kind of infinitely customizable. And that's one of the features of Android 12 is, your wallpaper changes the colors on your phone and things like that.
It's nothing
Apple would ever do.
And I'm not sure I want it to do that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want it to do that.
Yeah.
Leave my phone alone.
All right. Moving on.
Get
off my phone. I don't want. Get out of there. Shit. it's really, I want to use the Pixel 6. I have a Samsung smartwatch. I use Linux. I want to be in but the problem is the Apple ecosystem is so integrated. You can't use an Apple Watch with it. I want to use it. So it ends up just sucking you into this all Apple ecosystem, which I'm not happy. I don't think that's the right thing. But
I mean, isn't that what we want? We want easy to use hardware and gadgets and software and everything integrated. And you give up a little freedom for that. But I sure love the ability to just pop open my laptop and airplane my TV. Slippery
slope. Yeah. He who is willing to give up a little freedom for ease of use. I think Ben Franklin said this, didn't he?
That's right.
Something.
That's right. Nice smartphone if he could keep it.
Tyranny, yeah. IRS, this is going to be really interesting to see how people react to this, is going to start requiring face recognition scans to access your taxes online. That's going to happen this year. They're using a service, a company called ID.me, starting in summer 2022. It's all about security, right? But this is going beyond two-factor. You'll have to create an account with ID.me, and you will have to send them a scan of your driver's license or a government-issued ID, or you'll have to prove you are you, copies of utility or insurance bills. Maybe they'll ask you questions about your mobile phone service, but it's going a lot farther to say you are you. And I guess this is all because the IRS is experiencing a lot of fraud. I don't know. It says 27 states are using ID.me. This is from Krebs on Security. 27 states use ID.me because of identity theft with benefits. It's becoming such a problem. But I think people are going to go, well, you want me what? And sometimes you have to do a video of yourself, a selfie video of yourself, a live video chat. What do you think? On the one hand, this is smart for security, but boy, ID.me is going to have all of our information.
It's also complicated. And for people who don't, who aren't, you know, there are people who are not necessarily, you know, tech savvy that use online filing for their taxes and online access for their taxes. That may be the most advanced thing they do.
Yeah.
And for them, this is just going to, I have a feeling this will not stand. This will not be immediately required. I think it'll be optional and maybe you'll work into it over time, but it's not, this won't stand.
This seems like it's an ongoing story because actually last fall they announced that there would be some sort of like stronger biometric authentication. But I was looking at, you know, some of the reporting from this past week, and even the IRS is saying like it's not true. Like you don't have to submit facial authentication.
That sounds to file more, or pay your that's taxes more reasonable.
Too. So it's like. Yeah, so it's like, maybe they're in the process of like setting this up, and there's certainly issues with relying on a single company to do this, but yeah.
Especially a private company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so maybe it isn't going to happen this summer, although if you go to the sign-in page, it says it is. So I don't, you know,
There's a comment from the IRS in the Gizmodo thing that you guys have linked to, so that is way at the bottom. And then it seems like the spokesperson misspoke at the beginning.
No, this is an IRS page. We are bringing you an improved sign-in experience. You won't be able to log in with your existing IRS username and password starting in summer 2022. If you're a new user, please create an account with ID.me. This is not a spokesperson. This is their site. I'm very confused.
Yeah. You can e-file without uploading a selfie or any of that.
So some things you'll have to do. And that, I mean, that makes sense because not everybody has a smartphone or a laptop with a camera. I mean, now, you know, if you're just a normal person, you have to go down to a drugstore or something and borrow somebody's smartphone?
Please notarize my IRS authentication. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
IRS told Gizmodo that users can still receive basic information from the website without logging in, but added they will need to sign in through ID.me to make and view payments, access tax records, view or create payment plans, manage communications preference, or view tax professional authorizations. Then the IRS spokesperson later said the information he provided was not accurate. So
this sounds like a government run, like, you know, situation. Yes.
So I wonder if there's any way that the IRS could leverage the biometrics built into things like Windows Hello or the iPhone. Ideas.
Yeah.
Well, so that you don't have to use something like ID&Me, but
that's true. Where
you essentially create a hash with Face ID, and that is used to log in.
Yeah,
that would require government that can actually build those things. And
we're having trouble communicating.
I am going to give credit because we've had so many terrible government websites going back to the ACA and everything. But did you get your COVID tests?
Yes, they came today.
Did you see how fast that site is? How well it worked?
Yes.
And they came.
I got mine yesterday.
I don't know who set this up, but it's a snappy site. It's easy to order, and you got to figure there's a lot of people using it. Actually, the U.S. government actually has, and I can't remember what the address was, but has a analytics site that's open to all. Let me see if it's analytics.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The data.gov.
USA.gov. Yeah, you can see this. So this is, if you can narrow it down to just the Postal Service, which is, I guess, what's running this.
Yes.
It was more than 250,000 when I went there on Wednesday. There are 1.29 billion visits to the Postal Service over the last 90 days. This is actually really a great trove of information here. Right now, there are 250,000 people on government websites right now. Number one, USPS, then COVID home tests, then USPS, then COVID tests, and then login.gov. So, there, you know, the vast bulk of it is people getting COVID tests right now.
It's surprisingly good. I wish it had come last year when we did tests.
It's a little late.
Right before the waves. But, yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. It's
better than ever. Somebody, I don't know if it's U.S. Digital Services. I've got to find out who designed that, because that site is fast, it's reliable, and even at the peak, right after it was just announced,
it didn't crash.
It didn't crash.
No. I'm sure there was a lot of pressure to make sure that site worked, because it's like, we can't ensure election laws, but we can make sure people get their COVID tests, okay?
Good. Okay, let's do something right. So I just want to say, credit where credit's due, because you're right, not a great history of government websites and technology. This one worked pretty well. And by the way, they're using Log4j to keep track of all the logins, so you can be sure. No, I don't know. I hope not. Let's cross your fingers. Speaking of government, Senate committee has voted to advance the Amy Klobuchar, Marsha Blackburn antitrust bill. It was in the Judiciary Committee, passed Thursday, 16-6. This is the American Innovation and Choice Online Act that requires companies like Amazon, Google, Apple do not favor their own products in their search results. Surprising that they could get a bipartisan agreement on anything.
I think it's the one thing Democrats and Republicans can agree on.
They agree on big tech is the problem. Yeah. 100 amendments were offered at the start of markup. The markup's only 3 hours, but only a handful were debated. They were able to move it through pretty quickly. Now, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, that's another step. I'm not sure what the next steps are, because I did not watch Schoolhouse Rock. So I do not know how a bill becomes law, but even CNBC says the bill's path to approval by the full Senate is still murky.
I mean, there's something happening on the House side too.
Yes, they're doing the same thing on that side, and then they do a reconciliation. Basically, Mitch McConnell and has to say, okay, we'll let you vote on that. So there, you know, it's not just Mitch. It's whoever's I don't even know who's in charge anymore. Is it Chuck Schumer?
Chuck Schumer. Yeah.
And
but he's in charge.
It's kind of a joint sharing thing. So So they have to bring it up for a vote. But meanwhile, boy, are Apple, Google, Microsoft lobbying like crazy. Ted Cruz, this must have been a hell of a phone call. Had a 40-minute phone call with Tim Cook to discuss it.
It's just Tim Cook like saying the same thing over and over again.
But Ted.
You
can't
listen,
pass
listen
this. Yeah. But Ted. of course.
How do you spell Apple again? Yeah.
Apple's point of view is if you pass this, then our App Store will, the security will be harmed. It'll make it harder for Apple to let consumers out of monitoring from apps. You know, that check that IDFA box. Cruz said, I don't think that's the case. Big lobbying against this, which probably means it's the right thing to do, I would guess. I don't know. But it passed with a very big majority. So we shall see.
It'd be interesting if they actually start, if this all goes through and becomes law and we're actually looking at what these companies are doing more crucially too, right? Like, I think it's targeting companies with a ton of users, right? Like a large amount of
big
users
tech.
Who have
right,
big,
right.
Big tech that has market sway and then can help to avoid things like the way Google can prioritize their own links or Amazon can prioritize their own products within their search. Because it's something I look at. I see it happening in front of me. And then I see Amazon starting to make products that I know were being sold by other companies, you know, and now they're under Amazon Basics. And it's like all this stuff is happening and we are kind of just powerless to stop these giant companies from absorbing everything and making everything their own. We need to do more. So
I
hope this leads to
such mixed feelings about this. I don't know what the right thing to do is. I agree. I mean, I would like
too much power.
We all would like better control over our data. Mm-hmm. But I also don't fully trust Congress's motivations here. Some of it seems to be more like, we want to knock down Section 230 and we don't want to be censored on Twitter.
They're always trying to stick that in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So yeah. I have very mixed feelings.
But there's also benefits to this. You know, for example, my daughter is furnishing a townhome. She needed a new garbage can. She bought one. I saw it. I said, "Oh, that's a simple human can. You know, it's very slick, very stylish."
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? It's Amazon Basics.
Oh,
she paid about a half of it, and it looks very much like Simple Human, and it's made of quality, and it's less expensive.
But why?
For her, there's a benefit to that.
But grocery stores have been doing this for years.
Right.
Why is it somehow different if Amazon does it?
Mm-hmm. Amazon sees the data, too, of what's happening, and they also... I think like they have.
Well,
more
so do the grocery stores. They know how much olive oil they sell, and they could have a house brand olive oil. They sell access to the end caps. That's actually grocery stores make most of their money not by selling you groceries, but by selling product placement.
And Costco and others like put their names on things that are actually manufactured at name brand places too. Like you know.
Should tech be singled out for doing something that everybody else has done just because they're big?
I think it's the scale.
It is.
The scale. And we've talked about this before, too. Like, nobody elected Mark Zuckerberg to be, leader of the world internet. But that's essentially what he has become, right? And we are powerless. We are powerless against what Facebook is doing and other countries. Like, these things have blown up so much that... I think at the very least, government kind of wants some controls or some ability to push back. And we've seen what happens when industry, especially in America, is fully untapped, and like has full control over everything. So there needs to be a conversation.
I'm not a knee jerk anti-government guy. And I don't go along with the people who say, well, the government can't possibly figure out how to regulate this because they're so old fashioned. No,
this is the
will
roads.
Of the people. Yeah.
Yeah. We have traffic signals. We have seatbelts.
We can figure this out.
This is tech and government working together to save lives and, make things better for consumers.
But
it doesn't always work.
I want it to make – that's exactly it. I want it to make it better for consumers, not worse. And Apple's contention, and of course is in their self-interest, is, well, this is just going to make things worse. You don't understand the unintended consequences. It's just going to make things worse.
We need to highlight our own apps before other apps. It's important. It's so important.
So I would say, Devinder, I would take exception to the notion that Mark Zuckerberg is the de facto king of the internet and there's nothing we could do about it. You don't have to use Facebook.
But you are using Facebook, right? Like here, this is the thing we know. If you delete your account, and other people still have you tagged.
Well, that's Facebook using you. That's Facebook using you.
Yeah.
And but you don't have to use Facebook to access news stories, to communicate with your friends, to, to get the news of the day.
It depends on where you are.
You can turn it off.
If you're in a lot of international countries, WhatsApp is the de facto way you talk with each other. And Facebook has done a lot of work to make sure, hey, we are the we're the way companies, we're the way people communicate, right? We have subsidized internet in other countries and things like that. There are a lot of ways Facebook is basically underlying communication throughout the world. And it's not as simple as just saying, stop using WhatsApp if your family's in Asia or something, because you kind of have to.
The Justice Department, we talked about this on, I think it was on Twig on Wednesday, and the FTC are asking a request for comment about how they should treat mergers.
Right. This also came up when we were talking about Activision.
Okay,
Activision,
good.
Microsoft.
Yeah. So part of this is that the antitrust laws, the Sherman Antitrust Act and what's the other one's name? I can't remember, are a little antiquated. And so their question is, how does this change, how does the modern world change how we should treat this? In other words, traditionally we've considered consumer harm, but are there harms that perhaps are more subtle that we don't pay attention to? Things reducing innovation, which that's a serious concern, and also this issue of, and this is a complicated one, monopsony power. Monopoly, the idea of monopoly is one seller to many consumers. Monopsony is the opposite. There's only one buyer. And this is a particular issue in the labor market. If there's one big company is the only company hiring engineers, then they have huge power over that market. And so they're trying to understand that a little bit better. That's a big monopsony, I believe, was Alina Khan issue when she was a professor. She's, of course, the new chairman of the FTC and has wrote papers as an academic complaining about the power of Facebook.
She's the one who's basically like, yeah, deconstructed the way Amazon works and says why it's anti-consumer, even though the regular argument is like, yeah, sure, prices are cheaper, so it's better.
Right.
But I think it is more complicated than that. And yeah, I hope she ends up doing great work at the FTC. But Leo, I mean, you probably remember like how hard the government was against mergers like back in the, 60s and 70s too, right? Like I remember like I've read stories about like grocery stores in California. How much the government was like, these two tiny little chains can't come together because it would be a percentage too much. You know,
I think it all changed in the Reagan era, in late 80s and early 90s, under Bush as well, and even Clinton, where they just did not as aggressively pursue litigation against mergers.
Yeah, greed is good. It's the greed,
the greed is good era. That's right.
Right. But then preceding that was the AT&T breakup. Which was kind of, you know, the undoing of that, which to, you know, interestingly, AT&T is kind of reconstituted, but it's not the power that it once was. But that was kind of the pinnacle of that era of trust busting.
Threats to potential competition. That's, of course, the accusation of against Facebook buying Instagram and WhatsApp is to prevent. Instagram was tiny when they bought it. Why would the FTC have prevented that merger? Well, because it was taking a nascent competitor out of the market. And so they want to consider that as well.
It's and that one is kind of tough, too, because I was reporting on startups, you know, when that deal happened. So in the span of a couple of weeks, Instagram went from being a company where I could like email the CEOs, you know, just say, hey, how's your user growth going, and to being a $1 billion company, you know, and I don't think anybody was prepared for the whiplash of that. And that is basically because Facebook had the power to be like, here's $1 billion. You know, we see your future threat and nobody will ever give you this money. So why don't you take this acquisition? Right. It was so big, the government had no way to really respond. And I think now, after WhatsApp, after everything, certainly after this Microsoft Activision deal too, I do feel like there is more. The government is kind of seeing what's happening and the long-term effects of some of these things coming together. Maybe there's going to be smarter ways to push back against this stuff. I really don't.
Yeah, in fact, looking back on what happened with Instagram and Facebook may have a big impact on whether Activision and Microsoft come together, because you know it's essentially a huge acquisition for Microsoft, and it potentially changes Microsoft and changes the entire landscape, even though there are plenty of other game companies out there.
We should point out this is just a request for comment, a request for information. The FTC and this is the joint press release from the FTC and the Department of Justice, say the comment period is open for 60 days. You have till March 21st, 2022. But then it isn't even after that. It's not really up to them. Congress ultimately tells the FTC and the DOJ and the courts, frankly, you can bring a case. But you know, the courts are going to look at case law and they're going to look at the laws themselves. So it isn't really ultimately up to FTC and DOJ. They can decide to prosecute, but it may go nowhere. So it's interesting. I think these are reasonable things to think about. I absolutely do. I would hope really the place that they should be thinking about is in Congress. Do we need an update to our antitrust laws? Now, in the EU, the European Parliament is absolutely moving with alacrity. The members of the European Parliament Thursday voted in favor of the Digital Services Act. This is a big bill that covers the digital market, has a lot of amendments, but it's among other things, they passed amendments extending the limitation to sensitive personal data so that a company or a site can't collect political and religious beliefs, sexual orientation. Moreover, they decided online platforms should not make denying consent for processing personal data more complex than giving it. It shouldn't be harder to say no than it is to say yes. Mm-hmm. And This is a big one. Refusing consent to collect personal data should not be penalized by disabling functions. So this, I mean, I haven't read this whole bill. It's a big one. And there's a lot to it. And this has been much debated. They got a vote on measures against dark patterns. Article 13A. Dark patterns are techniques designed to distort or impair recipients of services' abilities to make free, autonomous, and informed decisions or choice. In other words, to trick you. Mm-hmm. It forbids the use of specific techniques to extort consent on personal data, for instance, via repeatedly showing pop-ups. You sure? You sure? Really? Come on. You know. It also prevents platforms from requesting such consent if users already chose via automated means. In other words, finally, that setting in your Firefox that says do not track, ask companies not to track, maybe they'd have to listen to you, which they don't right now. There's a lot more anonymity online, all sorts of regulations. Now, the way the EU works is a little confusing to me, but I think this is just advisory. I think mm-hmm. that each member nation has to decide what to do about it. That's my sense of it. But the good, and you might say, well, what do we care if we're not in the EU? And of course, many of our listeners are, so you would care. But even in the US, we should care because companies often are influenced by this. GDPR has absolutely changed how companies collect data. This is kind of the next step to GDPR, the Digital Services Act. So it has been adopted. Now, I think that the other shoe will be to wait and see what the mm-hmm. countries do with that. That's my sense.
Absolutely. And GDPR wasn't perfect, but it certainly like set the stage for yeah. companies to start thinking about this stuff more seriously. Yeah.
And it begat the California Privacy Act, the CCPA.
Right. Right.
And, you know,
and it has given us many more checkboxes to control our cookies when we go to. Yes.
I literally now have an extension.
Oh, there's an extension for right. managing it?
I haven't seen a cookie consent form in a long time.
Oh, I need that.
That's the problem. What's the name of it? If you do you use uBlock Origin?
No.
There's an ad blocker called uBlock Origin that has a check that has a feature you could say, no, I don't want to see those anymore. And I almost don't even want to admit this, but I also have a Firefox extension that will bypass paywalls.
You pirate.
Because the real reason is I pay for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I want to, when I'm showing articles here and stuff, sometimes I just want to show the article instead of having a bunch of logins and stuff. So this bypasses a huge number of paywalls. I shouldn't tell people about this. You know about it.
I've heard things. Yeah. I also know that Pocket and Instapaper are also really good if you hit one of those.
But to be really clear, I pay for more than a dozen. I pay for Bloomberg. Yep. I pay for Wired. But unfortunately, paywalls are so sucky. For instance, I pay for Wired. Good luck getting to a Wired article. I log in and it's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right, right.
So that happens so often. Like, I pay you, let me log in easily or remember me in a smart way. And they can't do that.
Yeah. So I just put this thing on and, you know, by the way, for Wired and Bloomberg, even though I've paid for them, I can't still get around these things. And I just want to show you the damn article.
Well, one of the best ways to get around them in a lot of cases is just to hit the reader mode on your browser.
Right.
That often will get you past it.
Good tips. We're giving out good tips here, ladies and gentlemen. And here's another tip. If you buy an NFT on Twitter, you can have a hexagonal profile picture.
No.
I'm unclear on this. If you have Twitter Blue,
you have to link your NFT wallet with
you link your wallet and then. But somebody pointed out this is a great way to just block Bitcoin bros, because every time you see hexagonal.
That's right.
Absolutely. Block them. I would love to block everybody with .eth at the end of their
Twitter, we want an edit button. We don't want NFTs for our avatars.
And there is an edit button. I think it implemented in the best way Twitter could have, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the edit button.
All it does is delays your sending. That's all.
That's the only way they could do it.
Yeah.
But it gives gives you a chance to look at it, make sure you made it. Has saved my butt.
It's the regrets
several
button.
Times.
Absolutely. The regrets.
Yes. It's the yes. It's the Gmail unsend button, basically. And right. you don't want right. people posting things, having them be displayed, and then taking stuff back. That would be a nightmare on an already nightmare service.
I use Tweetbot for my both on the Mac and for my phone, and it just added a feature that actually has been in Twitterific for a while, where you when you go to delete a tweet that you've done, one of your options is edit and delete, and it takes the text and puts it in a new composition window, and then deletes the old one, and then you can correct it. So it's for correcting.
That's just cheating.
Yeah. It is cheating, but I will cheat.
You lose all your RTs and
I will definitely cheat.
So, I am going to confess that because I was so perturbed by this, I found a site that actually will make a hexagonal Twitter profile picture just for you, and then you can use it instead.
I'm going to do that as a silent protest.
Just as a silent protest.
That's good.
So what I did with I made it six-sided. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that a hexagon? Yeah, I guess that's a hexagon.
Hex is five.
Five. No, but that's a pentagon.
Yeah.
And then there's an octagon.
Hexagon is six.
So you can make it stars. You can make it anything you want. And then people will think you're a Bitcoin bro, so maybe you shouldn't.
Leo.eth.
Yeah. I made mine a little. That's a six-sided one. Yeah. So I can't remember the site, or I would tell you. I'll have it for you by Twig. What should Spotify do about Joe Rogan? Think about that. We'll talk about it when we come back. I want to take a break. We're running a little long in the tooth here, and I want to tell you about our sponsor, Streak. As a startup founder, as an entrepreneur, you know what it's like running your business from your inbox. You use Gmail, you need Streak. Whether you're tracking sales, fundraising, hiring, support, Streak is a CRM that is in Gmail. It lives in your inbox. Use Streak's free email tools to check if your emails have been opened. Send bulk emails with automated follow-up emails to improve your response rates. It's all part of your everyday workflow because it's built inside of Gmail. You'll see details about your leads, your customers, your investors alongside your email. You don't have to go back and forth between Gmail and other tools. Great for prospecting new customers, making a fundraising round, growing your team, managing support tickets. You'll think of all sorts of ways you can use Streak. And it's this Streak pipeline is the key. It lets you track all your processes right inside Gmail. Very easy to set up a pipeline. You can set your first pipeline up in a couple of minutes and then create more, customize each one based on your needs. This isn't filters. This is so much more sophisticated. It's very clever. Streak makes it easy to collaborate, too, by automatically sharing emails and notes with anyone on your team. Google Technology Partner of the Year, used by thousands of founders, entrepreneurs, small business owners, more than 750,000 happy end users. I had never heard about this when they came to us. This is fantastic. Try Streak right now, free to use on your own, so you can get used to it. Try it for yourself. If you want to use it with your team, get the pro plan. In fact, we're going to get you 20% off your first year of their pro plan. That's the most popular option when you go to streak.com/twit. Isn't this a good idea? Get more out of your Gmail. CRM built right in. streak.com/twit. 20% off. Make it a winning streak. streak.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. Letter went out, a coalition of 270 scientists and medical professionals with an open letter to Spotify urging them do something about Joe Rogan.
Somebody please stop Joe
stop
Rogan.
Stop him.
Stop
him. Rogan says, I'm just a comedian. Of course, that's what Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson also say. On New Year's Eve, the program featured Robert Malone, a doctor who calls himself the inventor of mRNA vaccines. He was banned from Twitter. You would think the inventor of the mRNA vaccine would not circulate anti-vaccine misinformation. YouTube deleted a recording of the podcast shortly after it was uploaded to the website by a third party. The letter says, quote, by allowing the propagation of false and societally harmful assertions, Spotify is enabling its hosted media to damage public trust in scientific research and sow doubt in the credibility of data-driven guidance offered by medical professionals. The signers asked Spotify to immediately establish a clear and public policy to moderate misinformation on its platform. But is Spotify responsible for what Joe Rogan says?
They're paying him for it. So, you know, I think in if he was on TV, right, or a traditional network, certainly, yeah. And we see Fox doing this all the time. But there's certainly like limitations and things you can expect a network to do if somebody is just outright lying. But again, Fox proves the point otherwise, I guess.
What about the First Amendment? I mean, Rogan's...
First Amendment says that the government can't tell you what to do.
No, I know Spotify has the right to do it.
Right.
But, I mean, I think there would be reasonable for them to say, well, he has the right to say whatever he wants.
I think sure. That probably if he were to lose listeners, viewers...
Oh, then they do something.
Yes. Yep.
But
yes.
I guarantee you, this is not losing listeners. This is gaining them.
Yeah. Yes. A petition won't do anything. But yeah, a financial hit will certainly make Spotify rethink what's happening. And that's it. That's all these companies will listen to. So I would love for them to like take a moral stand at some point. But at the end of the day, they have shareholders and right? And people they need to like people who want them to make money. And it's really hard to take moral stances against that.
Rogan's podcast, number one on Spotify globally and in the U.S. last year. I'm reading Bloomberg. They say 11 million people listen to the Joe Rogan Experience, but I think that number comes from Joe Rogan. So Spotify does not say. Spotify paid him, and again, no one knows, but it's estimated around $100 million to be exclusive on their platform. They have, to be fair, deleted more than 40 episodes of his show to date. They've removed 20.
Spotify has, not like YouTube. Yeah. Spotify.
Spotify has removed 20,000. Well, the first thing they did is took all of the stuff down from YouTube because they own it now. So that was a different thing. Spotify has removed 20,000 podcast episodes for COVID misinformation. They do, you know, prohibit infringing and illegal content and hate speech. But they don't, I guess misinformation is the problem. And partly that's hard because it's hard to identify what's factual and what's not.
Except when he's out there denying like medical science.
Yeah.
You know,
well, people, and also
there was a clip going around of him, like somebody presenting, you know, kind of facts about what's happening. And he rejects it.
He screams at him.
Yeah.
Even though they are facts and it's pretty much. In that segment, it's pretty much proven, and he
He and the part of the problem, according to the scientists, is he's primarily listened to by young men, who are very influenced by him. I know my son was a big fan.
He's poisoning like an entire generation, of guys right now. And I talk to people who really are into him, and after a certain point, like it's like they live on another planet because of what Joe Rogan told them. You know, so there is harm there. I don't know. It would be nice if Spotify kind of stepped up and did something about it, but he's making them a ton of money. So, of course, they won't.
It's the number one podcast. Wish I could say that. It's okay.
We'll have you replace Joe Rogan.
There you go. But that's the thing. I'm not going to get 11 million listeners a month. That's crazy. I mean, that's I wish I could.
You got to be more provocative. Yeah,
honestly, that's the key. Yeah.
That's the key.
That's how you generate listeners. You know, be controversial, be provocative. The Fed has released a long-awaited. What the hell's going on with COVID with the Bitcoin? I confuse the two. Sorry, what's going on?
Both the other deadly. Thing.
The other virus affecting the world. Look at the price. That's today. $429 down today. $5,819 down this week. $14,999 down this month. What the? I feel sorry for El Salvador. That's their national currency.
That's right.
Talk about inflation.
In 2017, when Bitcoin was like at its peak, and I did this story, I think I've talked about this before. I did a story on Ethereum miners buying up graphics cards, and I went into this woman's house in North Houston, and she had turned her living room into a room full of Ethereum mining cages. And she had to beef up her air conditioning system in her house in order to do this.
Well, that's the thing. It's designed to cost you more as time goes by to mine.
I need to learn about this. So I spent $20 on Bitcoin in back then, and it peaked at one point at $122, my $20. And I thought, oh, I should cash out, but no, I'm going to hodl. And
you are, my friend, a diamond hands. You are on a rocket.
laser eyes. It's now down to, when I last looked, it was down to like $70, my $20. Yeah. And so it's, you know.
What is my...
I'm a skeptic.
I've lost half the value of my unlockable wallet. Doesn't matter. The reason I bring this up, the Fed has released a long-awaited study on the digital dollar, but refuses to take a position. So thanks for nothing. The central bank's 40-page document explores, according to the CNBC, a plethora, boy, I haven't seen that word in a while, of issues and notes that the public comment will be solicited. A digital currency, I mean, we're almost digital as it is these days, right?
But the dollar is digital for the most part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't remember the last time I used cash for anything.
Yeah. One primary difference between the Fed's dollar and other digital transactions, current digital money is a liability of the bank, you know, your credit card. A digital dollar from the Fed would be a Fed liability. Among other things, that means the Fed wouldn't pay interest on money stored with it. It is riskless, so you get to choose. I don't know. I don't know if this how this relates to stablecoin, which is another kind of currency, kind of a cryptocurrency that a lot of national banks are looking at. I'm not sure how this relates. Advocates of the digital dollar worry that the Fed's delay in implementing a central bank currency will put it behind China, which is already doing a digital currency. There have been suggestions. Suggestions have been made that China's lead in the space ultimately could threaten U.S. dollar's hegemony as the world's reserve currency. The Fed says, we're not that worried about that. We got to get this right. And at the very bottom of the piece, it says, and we can't do anything unless Congress allows it anyway. So,
right.
Forget about it.
It certainly will pay off for us to just take our time, right? We don't want to be a point where somebody's like, I lost the password for the Federal Reserve wallet.
Oh, my God.
What do we do now?
What do I do? I got millions in there.
Trillions. Cat.
Faster cable internet speeds are coming, says Dwight. Even though you don't really need them. What do you mean?
So this is a story I did. If you remember last week, I mentioned that my car.
What the hell is that? Are you wearing a cat hat?
All right, my cat has arrived.
He's an orange tabby.
He is
very
orange.
Pretty.
This is Milo.
Oh, hi Milo.
Yes. Oh, so anyway,
wow.
There he goes.
What a leap.
So anyway, last week I wrote about 5G, and I thought I'd write about home broadband this week. And, Comcast had said it had completed this test of the next generation of cable modem, which is known as DOCSIS 4, or to the marketing guys at Cable Labs, it's called 10G. And and it's called 10G because they think it can get up to 10 gigabits eventually. And so
double 5G. Yeah.
Yes. Double 5G. It has 5G is fifth generation. This is 10 gigabits. So anyway, so this is coming at the end of this year and early next. And Comcast and, Warner and all of the other cable companies are going to be moving to this, and it will take your speeds up to, if you're willing to pay for it, 10 gigabits. And I talked to an analyst and about this, and what's interesting is that right now, you barely need gigabit speed or what what a lot of people have with Comcast. This would take it even beyond that. But as we were talking, you know, about Activision and Microsoft and what's coming in the future, gaming in the metaverse, streaming games, at some point, if you have multiple people doing this in your house, you may actually start to need more than a gigabit. And so it's kind of a, the cable company's attempt to kind of get ahead of fiber providers like AT&T, and but it's coming faster than you think, and likely next year.
So this is kind of like that 5G conversation we had earlier.
Yes, but it's wired.
Yeah. I have gigabit right now through my cable company. It's not symmetric.
And how much do you actually get?
Close to a gigabit. Very close. Like 900 something. Mm-hmm. Why? Is that not?
A lot of people don't. Like, I have Comcast gigabit. And because of, I have a gigabit router, what I thought was a gigabit router, and it really can max out only at about 800.
Oh, okay.
And then my phone can only can get out of that gets about 500 or 600.
Right.
And so, but I don't, you know, I could probably get by with what I do with 300 megabits.
Well, it's really more how many people are using it at the same time, that kind of thing, right?
Right. If you have a household with multiple kids, they're all streaming games, or they're watching 4K video at the same time, yeah, you probably would need it. And of course, you'll also need Comcast to raise its bandwidth cap.
I pay for no bandwidth cap. Yeah. The big, and by the way, that is not cheap.
That should be outlawed. Like, talk about regulations. Like, yeah, my parents also had to move over to a business account because of that ridiculous thing. And what's the point of making speeds faster if you're capping
people? Wasn't there some discussion in the pre-Trump FCC about data caps? Wasn't there some discussion about banning them?
Well, there was a lot of court action about unlimited bandwidth.
Yes, right.
but not being unlimited, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, this specific technology sounds good because I do remember being in New York and relying on cable, and like you could tell when everybody was online at home at prime time, right? And then your neighborhood speeds start chugging. So having better speeds overall, like, you know, expanding that pipe a little, I think, is a good thing overall. But I'm sure people are not getting the speeds they're actually paying for. Like, I'm subscribed to AT&T gigabit down here near Atlanta, and I only really get gigabit if I'm wired directly into the router or like standing right near the router. And then I just started testing their new Wi-Fi 6 gateway, and that made things a lot better. But they're also doing things like I have what do you call it? An extender down here, a mesh extender. And now AT&T is going to force people to pay $8 a month forever for these things. Whereas last gen, I used to be able to just buy one for like $50 and you own it. Forever add-on. Yeah.
The good news at least with Comcast, when I was talking to their senior vice president of network operations, he said to me directly when I asked that they will continue to allow you to have your own modem and your own router when they go to DOCSIS 4. So you'll be able to buy a third party. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy.
You can't really do that in fiber. Fiber, you got to use whatever the company gives you, basically. Yeah.
So fiber's pretty much stopped, right? Nobody's rolling out new fiber. Or are they?
I see new fiber from down here from AT&T, but I don't know if it's like part of an existing schedule or plan. Or
Google
if it's
stopped, like new stuff. Verizon stopped. I guess we have a local provider around here called Sonic, which we actually use that we love, and they have slowly been rolling that. They actually have to dig trenches and stuff.
Right.
I feel like though that nobody's really investing in infrastructure at this point.
One thing about DOCSIS 4 is that it does use the existing cable infrastructure. So the coax
is a different protocol with the same hard.
Right. Yeah. The other thing is that cable companies have been, they use fiber up to nodes in your neighborhood, and they've been pulling that fiber closer and closer. And that's one of the reasons why they're able to do it, but they don't have to retrench.
You don't have to do fiber to the curb, but you would like to get. Yeah. Okay.
You get as close as you can.
Do you think you think we'll actually get 10 gigabits ever? I mean,
I think if you're willing to pay for it, you might get it. But, you know, I'll take the four that Comcast tested the other day.
Yeah. We have Fiber 10 Symmetric here from, is that from Sonic? That is from Sonic, yeah.
Is it 10 gigabit fiber?
Yeah, symmetric.
Nice. Very nice.
It's one of the reasons we moved here.
Oh, man.
I'll be honest with you.
I do want to throw a PSA out there for AT&T gigabit users. Apparently, this new gateway has fiber right to the gateway, which is kind of nice.
Oh, so interesting.
Normally, there's like a little box like that comes to your house, right? And that normally connects to fiber, and it goes Ethernet to the old gateway. Now it's like fiber right to the box. So I think that speed upgrades too.
So if you're a customer of AT&T and you get that new modem, they have to make a change in your house, right? They have to come in and bring that fiber in.
I think so there's a box, like at some point, you know, yeah, there is a hole drilled through the side of your house, right, to pull that fiber in. But the box that like sits by an outlet in your house, that's, they just have to swap that out. And then they can pull another fiber line right to the gateway.
Of course, if you're on Wi-Fi, nobody's getting speeds anywhere near that.
Why, my Wi-Fi is faster. That is the weird world we're living in right now. Like right now, I'm in an office in my basement, and I use I don't have full Ethernet pull down here, so I've been using Powerline Ethernet to get like really nice stable.
Yeah, that's a good idea
for podcasts,
and that's
stuff.
Working well.
But
for
that,
you? Yeah,
it should be gigabit, but the only speeds I'm ever seeing are like 200 to 300,
yeah,
like at most. So not really that much. But I have a Wi-Fi extender down here, and this sucker is getting me like 700 to 800, like regularly.
That's
so
more common.
I'm better
on
off being on Wi-Fi.
Power line networking than it is on on Wi-Fi. Yep. There is, here comes Wi-Fi 7.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Which you need with your 10G.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. If you're going to have that fast bandwidth, you better get better Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi 7 products should become available, according to a report from Digital Trends, next year in anticipation of the launch of Wi-Fi 7 around 2024. So you could buy the hardware, but you won't be able to do it anything with it till 2024. Taiwan-based semiconductor firm MediaTek conducted the first-ever tests showing super-fast speeds and low-latency transmission of its Wi-Fi 7 PhyLogic technology to key customers and industry collaborators, 2.4 times more speed than Wi-Fi 6, even with the same number of antennas. 30 gigabits? What? And going all the way up to 40 gigabits.
I mean, there's also Wi-Fi 6E that is kind of rolling out now, too. So it
yes, that's been
never ending.
Green light. Yeah, that's been green
light. Yeah, that's on the 6 megahertz,
right.
6 gigahertz spectrum, and they're really expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And many of your devices don't support it yet anyway. So, all right, let's take a little break. Last break, and then we will wrap things up with our fabulous panel, Dwight Silverman. I don't know what to say of what of Dwight Silverman
of Dwight Silverman.
Dwight Silverman.
I also have DwightSilverman.com, so you can
there you go.
Throw that into
DwightSilverman.com at DSilverman on the Twitter.
I'm like Trent Krim, the Independent. Now I'm just Trent Krim, Independent
and Independent. Yeah, nice.
Also with us, Devendra Hardawar of Engadget fame. Our show today brought to you by Zip Recruiter, our sponsor. I feel like we're on the cusp of a big year. And of course, there are industries now in 2022 that are already hiring to ramp up, because I have to think the end is nigh, and I mean that in a good way. sustainability, businesses, eco-friendly products and services, big pet services, all those pets that we got during COVID have to be walked and fed and trained. Fitness services, not just regular fitness like gyms, but non-traditional workout studios, kickboxing, wellness apps. It's going to be a big year, and if you're hiring for your big business, I want you to talk to Zip Recruiter. It's what we use for hiring, and it is awesome. Digital events and conferences, yep. Home improvement, a lot of people are renovating, redecorating. If you're going to be at home more, might as well fix it up. If you work for or own a business in a growing industry and you're hiring, you got to go to Zip Recruiter. Zip Recruiter, you can try it for free right now at ziprecruiter.com/ TWIT. What does ZipRecruiter do that makes it so special? Well, first of all, one posting on ZipRecruiter goes to more than 100 other job boards. So you're casting the widest net, social media too. The more people are going to see your posting, and that's good because the more people see it, the more likely the right person will see it and apply for that job. But here's another secret, super secret sauce that ZipRecruiter has. They'll actually look at your job posting, analyze their resumes, and find people who are right for your job and then send you their names so you can invite them to apply. And I have to tell you, when you invite somebody to apply, they show up. They show up for the interview. They're ready. They want to work for you because they're flattered, frankly, that you said, hey, you look good. Would you like to apply for this job? No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site according to G2 ratings, number one in the U.S. Now you can try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT, TWIT. ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. If you're hiring, God bless you. And if you need people right now, there's no better way to do it. ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. Try it free. I know you're going to love it. We had a fun week this week on the shows. In fact, such a good time that we've made this mini movie for you to enjoy. Watch.
You, Andy Anatko, and Jammer B always got some great stories.
Oh, man. You know, it's age, I think. As you get older, it turns out you did have some things to tell.
Do you have a memoir in you?
If I didn't hate writing so much. This is my second book.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Previously on TWIT, Tech News Weekly.
Activision Blizzard was acquired by Microsoft. This news kind of came through, and suddenly everybody was just, you know, lots and lots and lots to talk
about.
That's
pretty accurate. So when the news broke that Microsoft was going to acquire this company, it immediately raises all of these enormous questions about what happens to a company in turmoil that has cultural issues that might be fixable and might not be, honestly.
Windows Weekly.
There will be regulatory...
Well, that's the next question. Can this even go through?
I don't think it's going to be stopped.
You don't?
I don't think it's going to be stopped either. There's a single sentence in the Microsoft announcement that I think tells the tale. When this acquisition goes through, we will be the third largest gaming company by revenue. They're not creating the biggest. They're not leapfrogging everybody.
All about Android.
Even more excited to welcome our guest this week, my friend, your friend, none other than Mr. Patrick Norton. Patrick has earned the right of, for our video watchers, of a lower third that says the Patrick Norton, because there is one, the one, the only, the Patrick Norton.
I just thought Burke was mocking me. We go back, Burke and I.
Twit.tv. Tell your friends.
What are you going to tell them? That's the question. Thanks too to our Club Twit members. We had a great number of great Club Twit events. Stacy's book club, the Ask Me Anything with Andy Anatko. We've got some great events coming up, including an event with Mike and Amira Elgin talking about Gastronomad. Well, who else? Georgia Dow. That's right. Is that this week? That's exciting. Friday. It was Friday. We missed it. Oh, man. Well, anyway, that's okay. If you're a member of Club Twit, we put it up on the Twit Plus feed. You can hear it after the fact. There are, thanks to Aunt Pruitt, our community manager, there was a lot of stuff happening in the club. Here's the benefit. $7 a month. Ad-free versions of all of our shows. Access to the fabulous Club Twit Discord, which is full of good cheer. And lots of conversations, not just behind the scenes at the shows, but on all sorts of topics, books and coding and all sorts of stuff. And you get the Club Twit Plus feed, which is a unique feed filled with things that don't make it to the shows, including stuff before and after shows, the Untitled Linux Show, Stacy's Book Club, the Giz Fizz. $7 a month seems we should charge more, but we're not going to. All you have to go do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit and join the club. And we thank you, all you Club Twit members, for supporting everything we do here at This Week in Tech. Couple of short stories to wrap it up. We made a big deal when Twitter hired Mudge to run its security team. Peter Zatko, he's gone now. I don't think he was there more than 2 years. Zatko was famous. He'd worked in government, but he also was one of the founders of the Cult of the Dead Cow hacking group. Twitter recruited him after teenagers compromised the company's systems in July of 2020. I don't know.
Somebody help us with these teens.
Help us with these teens. Mudge, I don't know. I don't know what happened. Mudge is gone. That's it.
It's a Mudge nudge.
It's a Mudge nudge. He was nudged out after the new CEO came in. Also, Rinky Sethi, the chief information security officer. I think security's been good at Twitter. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
It's personalities. It is relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
New CEO, like, lining up his people.
Agrawal has people he wants.
Yeah.
TikTok's marketing chief ousted after going rogue with bizarre campaigns.
I love this story.
This is a great story. And when one of the things he was going to do was he was going to have this restaurant based on recipes from TikTok.
Yeah.
And when I saw that story, when it first broke, I was like, what? Because, like, the recipes on TikTok look just god awful.
Hey, wait a minute. You haven't seen my son's account. Hold on. My son is one of the. No, it's okay. I don't care. My son is one of the people, Nick Tran, who is the former marketing guy, was talking about. There's a lot of cooking stuff on TikTok. I think you would enjoy my son's cooking videos, however. I think they're quite good. And
that's just not what I would call clean food.
Oh, it's not healthy. Did I say it would be healthy? No, it's not healthy. He's got 1.8 million followers, though. Let's see. Ooh. Here's one with 7 million views. The pesto chicken sandwich. Always a, it's sloppy, it's wet, it's messy. And he made that knife stick right in the cutting board.
You got to stick the knife, okay, if you're a TikTok food guy.
I always see stuff like that. I go, how many takes did that take? I'll have to ask him. Anyway, he cooked a whole chicken for just one chicken sandwich. How about that, right? That's what I call commitment. Anyway, Nick Tran, back to the. Thank you for the chance to plug that.
Not really. Stop this. Yeah.
TikTok Kitchen was going to feature foods made popular on TikTok, including, by the way, the number one TikTok food, which is some sort of weird pasta with feta cheese that you stir up.
Oh, my God.
Gross.
Right.
I hear it was good.
Right. Like
people, I'm sure it was delicious.
Actual food people say it's good.
Yeah. But it didn't look delicious. Other half-baked, get it, product ideas. Creator-led NFT collection featuring celebrities like Lil Nas X and Bella Porch. The problem is he forgot to ask management.
he's just too much of an innovator. You know,
he's too much of an innovator.
Right.
Yeah. But we covered all of these things. TikTok resumes.
Yep.
You would post your resume on TikTok and help people get in. It helped people get entry-level jobs at Target, Chipotle. A TikTok senior executive called these campaigns out of line with the company's goals. Too many sideshows, they said. He was getting. Remember, TikTok is owned by what was is probably a fairly conservative Chinese company, and you know he was too good. He'll find a job.
It is weird how TikTok, owned by ByteDance, is a company that is basically like took what Vine was doing, kind of let people run with it and do a lot of different stuff with it. So that sense of freedom versus traditional Chinese company is a little weird sometimes, you know, what TikTok is turning into culturally.
By the way, salthank.com, get that Calabrian pesto flaky sea salt while it's still in stock. I'm shameless. I know.
Wow.
If you're going to Beijing,
we need to regulate all this. Too much in marketing.
That's right.
Hashtag sponsor, hashtag ad. If you're going to the Olympics starting a couple of weeks, February 13th, the athletes are being told, don't bring your phone. Bring a burner. Because you have to, first of all, you have to install an app.
Yeah.
A Beijing Olympics app, which apparently kind of tracks everything you're up to. So you're not going to want to bring that home. Bring your own phone, I guess, is the bottom line. China has an app that is required to even get around the Olympic Village, but there's some question about exactly how much it'll do.
I'm sure it's mostly for like COVID prevention stuff too.
Yeah,
is what I'm wondering.
Right.
They're trying to be zero COVID, and I'm sure it's like China wants to be really careful with all these new people coming in. But yeah, a little scary.
I'm going to ask Mr. Filmcast. Netflix.
Yes.
Kind of in trouble. The stock market, anyway, didn't like it when they reported a net game of, this sounds good, right? 8.28 million subscribers in Q4, driven by markets outside North America. 221 million total subscribers, but it was below estimates. Shares fell more than 20%. Wall Street analysts have been projecting a gain of 7.25 million subscribers for the first quarter of 2022. The company forecast a third of that. Also, investors likely spooked by the fact that Netflix admitted in its quarterly newsletter to shareholders that stepped up competition in the streaming wars may be affecting our marginal growth some. That's the quote. May, maybe affecting our marginal growth some. A little bit, just a little bit, a little bit. They spend a lot of money on content. And of course, it works for them, or it has worked in the past. But, you know, if it doesn't, then you've spent a lot of money.
For sure. They make so much stuff, and now they're not the only game in town, right? It used to be pretty much just Netflix, maybe Hulu. Like, Hulu was in there, and Amazon was throwing a lot of money at, like, prestige movies and shows. And now, with HBO Max and Disney and Paramount Plus and everything, all this stuff happening all at once, I'm sure, like, I have to pick and choose what I'm subscribing to sometimes. You know, I'm subscribing to Showtime for a couple weeks to watch Yellow Jackets, you know, and then
I hear
I'm
that's quite
that
good. Yeah,
it's really good. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah. I have to watch that. It's about a bunch of what cheerleaders who it's kind of
no, it's a soccer team. Soccer it's very team. Much alive. Yeah.
Lord of the Flies meets soccer team.
Meets Lost.
Meets Ted Lasso.
Meets Lost. Not so much Ted Lasso. Yeah, with the girls' high school soccer team, and you see them in high school time in the 90s. So you get like lots of great 90s soundtrack stuff.
That's fun.
And then modern day today with great actors like Christina Ricci.
Okay.
Love it.
That's all right. I'm gonna watch that. Yeah.
But there's too much to watch.
There is too much
to watch.
Billions is back.
Yeah.
I am finally catching up on The Witcher. That's hot stuff.
Don't forget Ozark
is back.
Ozark. Netflix is kind of like the baseline for me. I would not, to me, I was on the $17.99, now $19.99 plan for 4K. And it's like, I would not drop Netflix. There's so much there.
I love it.
And, you can't find, you've got Disney and HBO Max and so forth, but where else are you going to find something like Midnight Diner?
Yeah.
For God's sake.
There's obscure
Midnight
stuff.
Midnight Diner.
Yeah, you
wonderful.
Search around. That's the real problem is discoverability. Mm-hmm. But thank God we've got Devendra on the show because he's the
guy. I'm going to listen to his podcast. Yeah. I'm going to subscribe to that.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Midnight Mass? Because that is like the one Netflix thing. Everything Mike Flanagan does, just worth a watch. Yeah.
What's I don't think I've seen that. What's that about?
That is the recent horror show. It's very like Stephen King style about a small like island town off the coast of New England. So you'd actually appreciate the accents and stuff there, Leo.
What?
It is very much like
it's Good Will Hunting meets the House of Haunted Hill.
You don't want
to give them too many spoilers, but it's also a slow burn and it's really good.
I want to watch this.
It's really good as a slow burn.
It'll creep you the hell out. Yeah. It's really good. Everything Mike Flanagan does, and he's done several shows on Netflix at this point. So Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor. They could only grow like a rocket ship for so long, right? And even now, they're still growing, just not as much as Wall Street
this
wanted.
It's so typical of Wall Street expecting that kind of, 100% growth quarter over quarter.
What do you mean you can't keep doubling
you
this
just can't
or keep
do
growing
that.
So much?
You just can't do it. Yeah.
So there may be a plateau coming. Who knows? Yeah.
Felony charges, the first a fatal crash involving Tesla's autopilot. The driver apparently didn't know that the autopilot does not stop at stoplights, red lights. Whizzed right through the red light and caused a fatality crash. The driver pled not guilty. He's free on bail while the case is pending, but he killed two people in 2019, allegedly.
Yep.
Or did autopilot do it? I don't know.
The feature is called autopilot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
What does that mean? I respect a lot of what Elon Musk has done, with Tesla and with SpaceX. And then some things are just like, you're just pushing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't call it autopilot. Don't set these expectations because you're responsible for what's happening because of that. And that's what consumers see. They read autopilot. They expect autopilot.
Exactly. Exactly. Devendra, it's always a pleasure. Filmcast, the Filmcast.
The Filmcast.
TheFilmcast.com. And, of course, senior editor at Engadget. What are you working on over there right now? Any big stories?
We're in the middle of Sundance right now, so I'm just, like, watching a ton of movies. I just reviewed this documentary called We Met in Virtual Reality, which is it's a documentary set entirely in VR chat, which is this really cool, like, social community that exists in virtual reality, and it's been around since 2014. People have been really leaning on it during the pandemic, so it's about people who have found friendship and relationships in VR chat. It's a really well done documentary too. Like, they also, the director Joe Hunting shot it like a real documentary, so the camera it is a virtual camera, but it has depth of field.
This is really weird looking.
So, and I really like the movie, so I don't know if tickets are available for Sundance, but hopefully it'll be streaming somewhere eventually. And it's lovely. It shows that people are getting a lot out of being in VR and finding relationships in VR. And we make fun of the metaverse, but maybe some element of that will be really useful to people down the line. Yeah.
So this, it looks a lot like Second Life. This is people.
Better graphics.
You're watching here full finger tracking. Right. People are investing in like full.
So there's
body
real
tracking.
People. There's a real doing, person in yeah. this. Yeah.
It's a real person. People are doing belly dancing and dance courses and lap dances and stuff in it. Like it covers everything that's happening right now in VR chat.
Very interesting. Mm. Are they signing? Are they doing sign language? That's interesting.
What does it look like?
Yeah, somebody does a virtual signing class, and they do it regularly.
And the thing is, I could look just like that if I wanted to.
You could look like the man with the tail and the great pecs, yeah.
Okay, and this is a documentary. How interesting. Devendra's got a review in Gadget. We met in virtual reality, love in the metaverse. Great to have you on. Thank you, Devendra.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Thanks also to my old friend Dwight Silverman. And authory.com/dsilverman is where you can find his latest work. What are you working on today?
I'm just doing my column. I'm gonna do something, I think, on air tags and stalking next week.
That's an interesting story.
That is a really interesting story.
I don't blame Apple. Mm-hmm. It just works really well, right?
And what's interesting is you're hearing all these stories about people finding air tags on them because the product is doing what it's supposed to. It's alerting people to it.
Yeah.
The Android hole is a big problem right now because Apple has this app that will let you find it, but you have to turn it on.
Yeah.
And you have to manually like look for it. But it's a really interesting conundrum. I used it to find my keys the other day because my cats had knocked it off a stool and it fell behind the stool and I couldn't find my keys. And it's the first time I used AirTag to really find something and it worked great.
Yeah.
It's so good for keys.
Right.
Yeah. I think Apple kind of got a lot of heat for that for the wrong reasons. You can buy it. They're cheap. GPS devices, you'll have no idea that it's tracking you. And it's much more
accurate.
True.
It's the ease of use here. I'm looking forward to reading your thing, Dwight, because like the ease of use of it, there's a lot of weirdness.
It's interesting.
Here.
Yeah.
My sister, who is an Android user, was in town and had to use my car, and she's not familiar with Houston. I put an AirTag in my car, and I could see where she was because she wasn't on Find My, but it kept chirping at her because it was, it could sense a phone there, but it wasn't an iPhone, and so it would chirp at her, and it drove her nuts.
Next time, do what I do. Just put it in the trunk. She'll never know. I'm joking. Thank you, Dwight. Thank you, Devendra. And thank you.
I feel
terrible, but we her voice was so bad. We had to.
I'll bring Brianna on the Engadget podcast at some point. I would love to chat with her.
Good. Our loss. But and we'll also have Brianna Wu on at a later date. But I didn't want her to hurt her throat. She really was
sounded rough.
It was painful.
My throat always hurts after the show because we're going.
There's a lot of talking.
That's right, a lot of talking.
Yeah. How do you think I feel? We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's actually more like 2:30, 5:30 Eastern. 22:30 UTC. If you want to watch us do it live, tune in at 2 so you can see the setup and all that. Live.twit.tv, there's audio and video streams there. You can chat live at irc.twit.tv. Of course, if you're a member of Club Twit, you can chat at Discord, in our Discord server as well. After the fact, on-demand versions of the shows are on the website, twit.tv. There's also a YouTube channel. You can subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll get it the minute it's available of a Sunday evening. If you listen asynchronously, if you listen as a podcast, there's still a very active community at our Twit forums. That's www.twit.community. Our discourse forums, they're really fun. I go in there all the time. Twit.social is our Mastodon instance. It's kind of like Twitter, only nice. And no hexagonal avatars. Actually, I might make my hexagonal avatar there, too. That'd be kind of fun to throw them off. That's twit.social. They're both free. You're more than welcome. We'd love to have you. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing. Bye-bye.